Def Leppard guitarist Phil Collins, Jeff award-winning actress Donica Lynn, and the return of a swap meet with Greg Flam. Now, here's your host, a man who is fooling, Justin Kaufman.
Good work. You got it. Fooling. God, so excited. I don't think I've been this excited since Sebastian Bach blew us off. Do you remember that? Welcome to the download tonight here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Excited with you till 11 o'clock tonight. What a honor. I'm humbled to be on the air in Chicago on a beautiful day in the middle of the great summer. Of course, we got some weather to watch out for in the next couple days. It's supposed to get hot, but man, what a day today. And once again, just amazing to be on WGN Radio on the perch on Michigan Avenue. Like I said, humbled to be here. And we put together another great show tonight for you. I mean, I have a lot to promote. There's some great segments. We're going to talk about Springfield. We're going to talk about politics. We'll talk about cancer. We'll also have to swap meet tonight. But, I mean, does anything beat Phil Collin from Def Leppard? Pete, I mean, I don't know too much about, you know, as we learn each other and how we grew up. But, I mean, I could just see you listen to Bringing on the Heartbreak.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
oh yeah,
putting up the poster of the semi going through the triangle. I don't know if that's a thing or not, but something like that, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, huge Def Leppard fan.
Were you?
Oh yeah, had 10, 12 T-shirts.
Right, it's such a great T-shirt. One of the best sort of logos of metal history.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing too because they had such a prolific run. And they were one – it's funny. I mean, they kind of – their career continued, but they, like a lot of those bands, the band that they'll share the bill with this weekend, Poison, kind of were killed off by the grunge movement of the 90s. You know, they but if you think about it, 30 years ago this summer, the album Hysteria with tracks like Hysteria, Animal,
mm-hmm.
Rocket,
mm-hmm.
Pour Some Sugar on Me,
mm-hmm.
Love Bites.
Oh.
Love Bites, even going Ballad.
Ballad, yeah. Pretty. It's a pretty one.
They think Cruz got the market cornered on ballads? No way. Here comes Love Bites. But yeah, an amazing, it's amazing to think about that it's been 30 years since that record came out. I mean, for us teenagers at the time.
Oh, my God.
Not even teenagers. I guess it would have been 12, 13 years old, and you get introduced. It was Bon Jovi and Def Leppard and those bands that sort of introduced you to music that with rabid fan bases. You know, I mean, think about all the people when Def Leppard would come to Poplar Creek or Rosemont Horizon, like how, like, the pecking order, the hierarchy of your world would be established. The hot, popular people had tickets.
Heck yeah.
You know what I mean? And you're like, can I go? Your dad's like, no, eat your grape nuts.
I'd be like, can I get a ride to Sport Mart on 95th and Cicero to wait out in front of Ticketmaster?
Oh, man. I love it. It's such good stuff. And to talk to Def Leppard tonight, it'd be fun to reminisce about some of the great music produced by one of the biggest British metal bands of all time. So we'll have that coming up at the 9 o'clock hour. News, weather, and traffic tonight with Rob Martyr and Esmeralda Leon. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll do the carry out. How about that? Stay with us. It's The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Let's carry out. All right, here are today's top stories. The House and Senate gaveled in today and then said, yeah, you know what? It's too nice out to compromise. And they gaveled out. That's Springfield. Then they were like, who wants to hit the state-sponsored slip and slide? Yay! Oh, wait, there's no water? Oh, we ran out of money in the slip and slide budget. Oh, you guys, let's just go back to the hotel and watch reruns of The Sopranos. Free HBO! Right? It feels like all the lawmakers in Springfield are essentially at a convention they don't want to be at. All eyes on Springfield to not only see if a budget compromise can happen, but if the terrible game of political chicken will come to an end. So today's half-day governing doesn't bode well for the future. Again, Republicans have a plan that includes no Democratic input and is being called a compromise. That's not usually how compromises work, but okay. There are no Republicans and Democrats that could possibly write a bill together. Don't act like you guys don't play golf together. You know what they say, those who golf together can craft spending plans together. Never mind. Reruns of Entourage around in the hotel room. Half day. See you tomorrow. In national news, Republican Karen Handel won her race in the 6th District in the state of Georgia. This is a big referendum on Donald Trump, and Democrats were hoping to send a message for the midterms, but instead, a different message was sent via Twitter from a gloating president who essentially called out Democrats as losers. You know how the most respected athletes of our time do it. Remember when Tom Brady did that? Steph Curry? The Cubs? Remember when the Cubs went to Twitter? Said, "You're losers, Indians. Losers." Right. Anyway, big win for President Trump and another big loss for the Democrats, who at this point seem to have no concept of what they're doing. I mean, what are the slogans they're running on? Vote for us, hope will change? Or remember when Bill Clinton was cool? Or my personal favorite, we know we're right. Doesn't seem to be sticking. It must be summer in Chicago because the Sun-Times gone with the downtown danger front cover today. Come on. If it's not violence, then it's flash mobs. If it's not flash mobs, it's shirtless teens running around. Story's not new. So the idea that we like to scare everybody with a threatening headline is just playing to the obvious. The city is a city everywhere. Remember the loop like 20 years ago? Come on. What's tomorrow's headline? Michigan Avenue mayhem. River North ruin. Bucktown blood. I'm trademarking those, by the way. Robbers are posing like Uber and Lyft drivers to pick up passengers and subsequently rob them. Am I the only one left in the world that pays attention to the make model of the car on the app? Then opens the door and says, "Are you Ahmad? Are you Ahmad? I'm Justin. Ahmad, Justin, good? We good?" But man, crafty that criminals are picking up people in their car and then holding them up. I mean, just mugging people on the street? So yesterday. Now you can rob them from the comfort of your own vehicle. What's next? Do we just go to their houses? "Hi, are you Randall? I'm here to be robbed." "Oh, yeah, great. Could you just put your phone and wallet on the table? I'm watching Netflix." In the wake of some recent bad publicity, United Airlines is doubling down. It was announced today that they're going to start serving Chicago deep dish pizza on some U.S. and Mexico flights. I was just thinking, what do I need on my flight to make it more of a clown show? I know, a microwave cheese pie. Just imagine when that stringy cheese can't be cut by the plastic fork and you drop a piece of tomato sauce on your crotch. I'd be like, "Here, please, I want you to drag me off this flight. For what? Here, please, drag." What's next? In-flight wings? How about a nacho plate at 5,000 feet with that? These are good. In weather, beauty. In sports, the Blackhawks dealt a blow today with the news that star Marian Hossa is going to miss the entire season with a skin disorder. Funny how usually hockey goes generic with injuries like lower body, upper body, but this time they go specific. But what a loss. Hossa, of course, getting older, but still a savvy vet who's been with the squad for all three cups. It'll be interesting to see if the Hawks make any trades to replace him or go ahead with trading away other core players. I don't know the rules here, but reports are saying that Marcus Kruger will remain with the Hawks through the expansion draft, but he might be traded away after. The Hawks will get a little bit of cap relief with Hossa being on the IR, which is drawing conspiracy theories that this is the Hawks essentially announcing Hossa's retirement without the salary cap hit, which I guess could be the first. Oh, you guys got us with the old skin disorder trick. Come on. Seen it done so many times. In baseball, a day game at Wrigley? How quaint. Cubs lost the final game of the series today against the Padres on an eighth-inning bases-loaded walk. Really? Anyway, they beat the Padres in the series. They're currently a game back to the Brewers. Rizzo was 0-for-4 today at the leadoff spot. Unacceptable. Next, what about K-Bry? Miguel Montero? Can we get Montero to lead off? Bring Rossi back out of retirement? Hey, someone's got to lead off. The Cubs go out on an 11-game road trip starting tomorrow in Miami. Ooh, they haven't played well away from Wrigley, so they need to turn that around bigly. The Sox lost a close one last night to the Twins, which is a bummer because they climbed back into it only to lose in the end. Although Avisail Garcia played probably the worst right field I've ever seen in my life. I mean, since the days of Wonderleg Bronco League when I was in right, which at the time was a very important position. The game's changed. If you're in right field in Little League, that's where the – yeah, right. Anyway, the Sox need to rebound tonight and get a win or all hope is lost. Well, maybe too hyperbolic, but if you don't win tonight, we'll never watch you play baseball again, White Sox. Maybe the trade market for Jimmy Butler was overblown. Several reports say the Celtics weren't interested in trading for Butler, or at least at the Bulls' price. And Butler apparently told the Cavs that he didn't want to play in Cleveland, which, let's face it, smart move, right? I mean, have you been to Cleveland? Hopefully they take it personally and we get some LeBron Butler stare downs on the court next year when the Bulls are getting blown out. Although, no, the Bulls are notorious for winning the meaningless November matchups against the Cavs. And that's where you're like, whoa, this could be something. Yeah. I mean, that's the Bulls thing. If there's one thing, they should do marketing. They should be big billboards on the expressways. Like, we beat the Cavs in November. Anyway. And finally tonight, news out of Hollywood is that the Han Solo spinoff movie, it's running into problems. Today, the studios fired the directors. Ouch. When asked for comments, studio exec Chewbacca said,
over budget.
Not good. That's the carryout for June 21st, 2017. Hey, we heard fries are bad for you, so you know what we're going to do? Double your order. We got your back. All right, coming up, Mike Fouché is going to join us, talk about the half day. So nice in Springfield. Just take a half day. Talk about that, some city stuff as well. Joins us every Wednesday here on The Download, 720 WGN. Stay with us. Rob Martier, how are you, my man?
I'll make an announcement tonight, Justin. I'm actually retiring from radio. I'm going to become a state legislator because I really just want to do nothing for the rest of my life.
That'd be great.
Isn't that amazing? We're going to talk about that. I don't know if there's any there should be like a PR or a marketing person, like an imaging person down there. It's like whispers into Mike Madigan's ear like, this isn't going to look good.
Springfield, it's not just for government anymore.
Well, I normally don't like to toot my own horn, but I did have a pretty good line in my 7 o'clock update. You want me to reread it for you?
Yeah, of course.
It was day one of the special legislative session in Springfield, and much like Governor Rauner's speech last night, it was brief.
There you go. Right.
Boom.
Done.
Rim shot.
I got to get Rose sound effect machine humming. And it takes like an hour to get it back up and running.
Oh, boy.
Doo-doo-tsh.
All right.
All right. Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. Wednesday night, that means Mike Fouché is here from the Daily Line. Made some news this week. Mike, good to see you, buddy.
It's great to be here.
Saw you in Robert Feeder's column.
Yeah.
Expanding to a Springfield bureau.
Yeah, we're adding
the Daily Line.
Bureau.
Talk about this.
We've got a new editor that's coming on. She's a former Associated Press reporter. She even had her own State House news service for a while. Ray Hodge, she's going to be starting on July 3rd. And then we're launching on July 17th. We're going to be doing the same old that we do here in Chicago, which is just the nitty-gritty detail of all the stuff that's going on in Springfield. We're going to be building a team. We're very excited.
That's great, man.
This is going to be terrific. Yeah.
That's awesome. Perfect timing.
Well, what's going on down there. And, you know, actually, one of the things that's crazy is I was talking to an old Springfield hand who was telling me in the 90s, there were something like 40-something people in the State House Press Corps, and now there's like maybe 12. So, you know, we're pretty excited to be adding to it.
Yeah, rebuild. I love it.
That's what we're all about.
Congratulations. They can find out all that info at dailyline.net.
TheDailyLine.net. You can go subscribe.
All right, let's talk Springfield. Today, surprisingly, we were kind of making jokes about it at the beginning of the news, but all eyes on Springfield and both sessions, the House and Senate, they gavel in. They make sure that the gavel works and they gavel out.
And
what happened? I mean, they didn't even do a half day today.
No, I mean, well, it's not as if there's a lot of stuff that they can discuss actually in the special session. The special session, there's only one thing that they're there for, which is the budget. And the whole idea of having a special session is that you force all these legislators to be there, and that you put more pressure on the leaders in order, you know, the idea is that all the rank and file legislators are there and they're complaining and grousing about, oh man, I got to be in Springfield. And so it puts pressure on the leaders in order to actually negotiate something and put something through. And that's really what's going on behind the scenes, is that there's a lot of negotiations that are going on with the budget, you know, a lot of griping and back and forth between people. And frankly, you know, every time I have a conversation with a legislator, they say, well, you know, check back with me in 2 hours, something will be completely different, because things are moving, you know, pretty quickly.
It just seems to me with all of the, I mean, we set all eyes and let's talk optics. I mean, this idea that, you know, this is going to be one of these special sessions for the history books and we need to get this done. And all, I mean, national press is talking about this, Wall Street Journal. I mean, there's a lot going on. And then for not to recognize the optics that you can't even do can't even do a puppet show.
You know, nobody
you just gavel out. It just seems to be, to me, it seems very tone deaf.
I don't think that, you know, this is part of the problem, which is that there is a massive difference between what it is that we, the media, are typically reporting and what it is that's actually happening. And there is a lot of behind-the-scenes kind of
sure.
conversations. So just the other day, I was talking to a legislator who was telling me that he had a particular deal on some human services stuff that really made a big difference, and that he, as a Democrat, was more likely to be interested in what the Republicans were offering. And so I said, oh, wow, that sounds really great. Sounds really positive. He said, well, you know, we'll see how it is in 24 hours. I could either be crying or laughing. You never know. And I think and I pressed him, will you give me some of the details on this? Tell me about it. He said, nope, because if I tell you, the whole deal will go flat. Nobody wants to know about it. So, you know, I think that this is going to be a very difficult. I think that in a lot of ways, the way the deal is going to come out is that it's going to be, we're going to hear all of a sudden something that's going to be offered, and it's going to move very quickly when and if there is a deal.
Okay, I understand that, because that's how Springfield has worked in the last couple of years, and it's also worked in this way that doesn't respect or seem to adhere to any sort of deadline in the way that
right.
they come and go, and it doesn't seem to matter because everything is now by decree in
the way
it's judged.
I think there is an enormous amount of pressure, although let's put it this way. Here in Chicago, we feel a lot more pressure because CPS is de facto bankrupt and we need state money in order to pay for it. We have a lot more attention to human services here in Chicago because we have a lot more poor people and people in need than other parts of the state. So, but in other parts of the state, you know, you're maybe not really necessarily paying attention to a lot of this stuff.
Right.
I mean, I think definitely south of I-80 and west of I-39, so the western part of the state and the southern part of the state, they just don't care about this stuff as much because it doesn't impact them. You know, you look around, you're in Chicago, you look around, you see government at every turn. You know, the CTA, the schools, police, you know, government is doing something everywhere you are in the city.
There's a direct correlation between the funding that comes from governmental agencies and our
right.
direct life of getting
right.
on a train or...
But, you know, you're standing somewhere in southern Illinois, whether it be Alma, Illinois, or Ottawa, or, you know, Peoria, you're not necessarily going to be intersecting with government a lot.
Yeah,
and so people, they don't really think about it.
We talked with Senator Berkman last night on the show and some others about this throughout the last couple of weeks, just about this anti-Chicago bias. And that, you know,
yeah.
Amanda Vinicky brought it up in the City Club that was just yesterday with Bill Daley and others there. This idea that there even is a political rhetoric, and you hear it from Governor Rauner when they use the word bailout. And others about the school system, that there seems to be more and more of a political opportunity to make it the state of Illinois versus the city of Chicago. And
right.
it's an old game. That's what Bill Daley said. He's like, this
yeah.
is not new. That's what they've been doing for
yeah.
years. But it seems like going into this special session with the leaders of both the House and Senate, the Democrats are from Chicago.
Right.
There's a CPA, you know, talk about school funding. They want to bail out to their school district. I mean, there seems to be more and more rhetoric playing to this idea of the state of Illinois versus Chicago, which is a de facto Republican versus
Democrat. Well,
it's
always been true. I don't know that it's been Republican versus Democrat. I had a conversation with somebody in labor yesterday who was telling me, somebody from downstate in labor, who was lamenting the fact that there's so little labor now in downstate. But he said, you know, back in the day, we hated you in Chicago, too. You know, I might have been a Democrat, right, but right. I still hated you.
Right.
You know, so the whole idea of downstate versus Chicago is not really a Republican versus Democratic thing. I think it's become that because downstate has become a lot more red than it is now. But it has nothing to do with Republican ideology. It has everything to do with people in downstate. They feel alienated from Chicago. Chicago is some kind of a weirdo place. The traffic is terrible. It smells. You know, people want to talk to you, and you know, you don't want to talk to them. And hey, I'm just in my car.
And to say the bully type politicians who keep going to Springfield and saying, "I know you gave us money for schools, but we're going to need more than right. your area, more than right. everybody else, because we're right. Chicago. We're Chicago."
Right, right. And but at the same time, there's a tension because people downstate, and a Republican was saying this to me too the other day, which is that there's this tension between the fact that, well, you know, we really can't stand Chicago, what a pain in the ass, and yet it's the economic driver of the state.
Yeah.
You know, without Illinois, there still is a Chicago. Chicago still will exist.
Yeah.
Without Chicago, is there an Illinois? I mean, John Cass had this column today
about where dissolving Illinois.
You know, let's
right.
dissolve Illinois. And he sort of had these arbitrary BS lines where he just kind of said, well, this will be Iowa and Indiana.
Yeah, it was interesting. It was an intriguing article.
And the thing is that, yeah, actually, you know, in a lot of ways, it's kind of true. Yeah. You know, I think the people downstate would be offended by that, actually, because they do feel like they're Illinois citizens rather than Indiana or Iowa. And my wife's family's from southern Indiana. I can tell you it's really different.
It's really different from southern
Illinois. You know, so.
Let's do this. Let's take a break. Mike Fouché from the Daily Line is in studio, as he is every Wednesday. We'll take a break. And then we got to come back and talk politics, pre-slating.
Pre-slating, right?
Which sounds gross.
Well, you know, sort of like pre-SATs.
Right, okay.
I don't know, you know.
Pre-slating.
Yeah, pre-slating.
Is on the docket. And some very interesting news about retiring Cook County Clerk David Orr.
Yeah, man.
This is brand new news that just came out this afternoon. Yeah. Mike Fouché here in studio. Stay with us. All right. Mike Fouché from the Daily Line in studio, as he is every Wednesday night.
Yeah.
We're talking Springfield. What do we expect? I mean, are they going to do the same thing tomorrow and Friday? Until
a deal is cut. You know, and actually I've spoken to more than a few people on both sides of the aisle. They're like, yeah, you know, I don't know if this is going to be the only special session. You know, it's supposed to be over June 30th. We just might have another in July and, you know, keep on
rolling. Kidding. Now it's just going to be special session.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I know. Maybe we'll have like a thing where everybody gets locked in a room and then, you know, you can't come out.
Like what those called, like the panic room?
No bathroom.
Yeah. That's a great bit. We
you
should
know,
get
only like salted peanuts to eat.
We should get all the leadership to go in and try to figure out the King
Lock
Tut's tomb for 90 minutes.
Yeah.
In the panic room.
This is sort of related. One of my favorite things is in New Mexico, if there's a tie vote in an election, you have to decide it with a game of chance. And they usually do it by not flipping a coin, but card that you draw and which card is the higher card.
Like war?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
That is cool.
Yeah.
Government at work. All right, let's talk pre-slating Cook County Democrats getting ready to slate their candidates for the,
for the 2018 election season.
Big news today, David Orr, long time, 39 years, Cook County clerk here, former mayor of Chicago.
Yep.
He decides to hang it up. He is not running for re-election. He's retiring from politics.
He's been in elected office since 1979.
Wow.
When he defeated, all right, you ready? Okay, old people, listen in. He defeated Esther Saperstein for alderman in 1979.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And before that, his buddy, Mike Kreloff, who is now the Northfield Township Committeeman, had run in 1975 against Esther, lost to Esther. David Orr had been Mike Kreloff's campaign manager, and then they decided to do it again, but they were going to flip. And so Mike became David's campaign manager in 1979. David Orr won. And, hey, you know, they're
the
still buddies.
Somewhat history. I mean, he's done a lot of work here in Chicago for voting, for early voting. I mean, he's been a big part of of the voting experience in Cook County for so many years. But even before that, I mean, he ran, I mean, as mayor, he was in for, I think the history is like
6 days.
Yeah, he was the guy who stepped in after Harold Washington died. Yeah. So a lot going on there. But
well, most importantly is that he ran the city council meeting that was very contentious, where the city council decided who was going to be the acting mayor. And it was, I mean, I don't know if you remember, but I remember clearly there were huge crowds that ringed all of City Hall, and the meeting went late into the night, into
midnight.
It's
great. There's some footage on YouTube of them popping out with, what's his name? His daughter's a Deb Mel.
Deb Mel's daughter, or Dick Mel,
Dick Mel popping, getting on
popping
the desk.
Popping up and yelling.
Yelling.
And it was really David Orr's calm hand, and the fact that everyone thought that he was fair and balanced, that the whole thing didn't go into complete chaos.
Well, okay, so he's stepping down. He said he doesn't want to do it anymore. He's retiring after a great, illustrious career here in Cook County. What does that mean? I mean, the clerk position in any other county, this would be a big, deal. So what's it mean?
So everyone may remember that last November we voted on a referendum in Cook County that forced the Recorder of Deeds office and the clerk's office to merge. And that meant that the current Recorder of Deeds, Karen Yarbrough, she couldn't run again. Her term would end at 2020 and she would have nothing to do. Well, Karen announced maybe a month ago that she was going to run for clerk no matter what. She was going to run against David Orr.
Okay.
And so Karen Yarbrough is preparing to run. And so pre-slating for Cook County Democrats. So that means that weirdo term, pre-slating. Basically what it is that everyone comes to make speeches. It's an open hearing, an open forum. Governor candidates are there. It's all day.
That's
tomorrow.
Today and tomorrow.
No,
or
tomorrow,
just tomorrow.
Tomorrow and Friday.
Tomorrow and Friday, right.
The good stuff is tomorrow. It's all judges on Friday. And
you get the public's open to go watch this?
Yeah, they could.
You said that with such confidence.
I mean, nobody's really going to do it. You know, but yeah, you could. You know, media goes.
I'll meet you down there.
Yeah, you want to go? We'll get some raisinettes.
That should be a away a contest. Who wants to go with Justin Mike to watch
Justin Mike
pre-slating?
I mean, you know, wow, that sounds
hot. We'll
give you
a 6-pack of Pepsi and you get to listen to 4-minute speeches.
Don't forget the Jujubes. Yeah. And so, all these different people are coming out, and Karen Yarbrough so far is the only one who said that she wants to run for clerk. Karen Yarbrough, she would end up, if she won, and I think she would have a pretty good chance of winning, if she won in 2018, she would become the clerk. But then in 2020, there's still a part of a term left, so that means the county board would have to appoint somebody to take her spot for the last 2 years. But the truth is, now we're going to get really deep.
That's weird. So she could win, but then in 2 years, someone else has to come in? Or,
well, no, somebody has to do the remaining term.
Oh, I see, because that
recorder.
Will not, because you got to go up to whatever turn it is.
Right.
I got it. Okay,
right.
Got it.
Even though it's
silly
really
me.
Kind of
silly
a,
me.
Really, they're basically just merging the two offices.
Yeah, but they still have to wait it out, right?
Right. So you get somebody who gets to have a nice plush job for a couple of years and, you know, hang out. But really, now what everyone's really talking about is that Karen Yarbrough really wants to be Illinois Secretary of State.
Mm. Jesse White has said
that he's running for reelect.
So I'm confused because I could have swore, and I remember doing carry out bits about Jesse White stepping down. Or not stepping down, but saying, I'm not going to run again. I'm going to retire.
Right.
So somewhere quietly in the last couple months, he said,
I'll do another one. He's 82 now. He's going to be 83 next year. And, hey, guys, he's still doing headstands for the Jesse White tumblers. All right. So, honestly,
what do you make of that? What do you make of Jesse White wanting to run for Secretary of State?
I think the real deal is that he is the most popular politician in Illinois. He's won by enormous margins. He wins Republican counties constantly. And really, the deal is that Democrats don't want to have another seat that they have to defend in this election. So get that off the table. You don't have to raise money for it. And that means that if a Democrat wins in 2018 for governor, then Jesse White could step down, and then the Democratic governor would appoint their replacement. And so the expectation is that if a Democrat wins for governor, Jesse White would step down, and there's a high likelihood that Karen Yarbrough would be seeking that position.
I get the concept of politics, and it just sounds dirty. Like the idea that you would run with the hope
you're not
that
really
you could
running.
Retire in 6 months after you're elected by the people.
Yeah.
It just seems disingenuous.
You know what,
man? I don't know. It's like one of the reasons we hate politics.
This
right?
has been going on forever.
I know, right?
In the 1850s, this is one of my favorites, David Ogilvie, he was governor of Illinois, And back in those days, the governor appointed the senator. He was sick of being governor. He had been governor for three terms.
He appointed himself senator.
And he became senator. So, you know, we've been doing this stuff forever.
So, hey, one can dream.
You know,
one can dream.
Right, I know. Be like Ogilvy,
the train station. Yeah. So that's going on tomorrow and Friday. And we will have a better understanding. We're not going to know who they're going to choose, especially when it comes to the governor,
August. They don't vote until August. They don't vote until August. And then, you know, candidates start passing their petitions in October.
How important is it for the Cook County Democratic Party do they slate a candidate? Is that essentially an endorsement?
Yeah, it is. It's a big deal for these county-wide offices. Because this is something they started doing.
But I guess my question is about the governor. Well,
for the primary, it's a big deal. And one of the things the county party does is that they have this giant mailer that they do that has, these are all of our endorsed candidates. And it goes to every Democrat voting household in Cook County. That's a big spend. It's very expensive. And for a lot of people, it's the only real material that they get about who's running for office that they pay attention to. Mm. It says Cook County Democratic Party. Oh, yeah, I guess I'm Democrat. You know, I'll go for that. And so they look at that and they take that into the voting booth. And it's a big deal.
Yeah, that's fascinating to me because that's not, I mean, it is, I mean, it's obviously they slated, that's what they want, but it isn't necessary. It's really an endorsement. It's just an old school way of doing it, saying we've slated these candidates, here they are, vote for them. And people at home are like, these must be the only candidates to vote
these
for.
These must be the people that I want to vote for.
So it's very important in the Chicago area and Cook County to get that endorsement.
Look, I mean, here's the thing, is that the reason why parties and candidates, parties continue to exist and continue to do well is because of the, quote, low information voter. If you are not paying attention, if you're not looking to see who all the different candidates are, if you're not informing yourself on what the positions on everybody are, you are part of the problem. So get out there, you know, start looking at to see who all these candidates are and paying attention, because if you want to be able to make a good decision, you have to make it with the information that you gather for yourself, not that something that somebody else feeds to you.
Mike Fouché is the man behind Daily Line, thedailyline.net. You can check it out there. He's also got the podcast Aldercast, which is here on WGN Plus. Now the Springfield edition, which would be July 17, is when that starts.
That's right. Stoked. Right,
look at that. You got a lot of stuff going on.
I know. We got busy people, man.
All right. Good. Thanks for being here, Mike.
Good to be here.
All right. Coming up, we are going to have Donica Lynn, Jeff award-winning actor, musician, mother and cancer survivor. She's going to be my guest at the big table. She's got a tremendous story. We're going to talk about it and also hear some live music. She brought a guitar player with her tonight, so we will talk with her. Also coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, Def Leppard guitarist Phil Cullen. How awesome is that?
Pour some sugar on me.
There it is. Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up the 9 o'clock hour tonight, Def Leppard guitarist Phil Cullen will be our guest. They're going to be at the Hollywood Casino Amphitheater, the old World Music Theater, on Saturday. Get this lineup. Def Leppard, Poison, and Tesla. That is the tour right now that's coming through Chicago on Saturday. A lot going on that weekend, but that's got to be a highlight. Idea those three bands on the same bill. So we'll talk with Phil coming up. For anyone who wonders, Phil's the shirtless one, guitar player in the band. So he'll be my guest coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. Well, my guest tonight at the big table is a singer, actor, mother, and cancer survivor. Donica Lynn won the 2016 Jeff Award for her standout performance in the musical Dreamgirls at the Porchlight Theater, and she was named the 2016 Person of the Year in Chicago Theater by Chris Jones and the Chicago Tribune. Lynn is a well-known face in Chicago theater, and you wouldn't know from watching her night after night that she's a three-time brain cancer survivor. She's been battling tumors since the age of 12. Donica has had two craniotomies, and her last bout, she opted for laser surgery instead, radiation, chemotherapy. The latest tumor has shrunk, but doctors continue to monitor her situation. And all of this, Donica continues to perform on stage in Chicago. She's going to be in Rock of Ages at the Drury Lane coming up later this summer. She's a mother to her three children, and she continues to fight not just the cancer, but the emotional and financial stress associated with the illness. And on June 26th, Donica Lynn will host and headline her fifth benefit for cancer. at the Mercury Theater in Lakeview. It's called Today's a Good Day, Walk With Me, a benefit for anyone touched by cancer. Donica Lynn, my guest tonight at the big table. Donica, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
All right, so there's a lot to talk to you about, of course. You're living a life, I'll tell you that. But let's start. I mean, you know, you had such a tremendous year in 2016. I mean, Dreamgirls was a huge smash hit. You won the Jeff Award. You obviously Chicago Theater Person of the Year, the Chicago Tribune, and all of that going on and all the success, the cancer returns. And so talk about that.
Well, the cancer's been there for a while, but, you know, we battle that every single day, day by day, step by step. And, you know, the reason why the concert is entitled Today's a Good Day is because the days that are good are really, really good. And we try not to get mired down, or I try not to get mired down in the ones that are bad. Mm-hmm. I have a dear friend who used to ask me, how you doing today, girl, Carl Hamilton? And I'd say, today's a good day. And he'd say, that's your testimony. Today's a good day.
Right.
The walk with me is because of the Village of Songbird Blue, BLU, be mm-hmm. loved unconditionally, because that's how the community supports unconditionally. My family, they support my children. They just love without condition, you know, the theaters that I work with, they're always there to support no matter what. When I actually received the last diagnosis in 2010, I was scheduled to do a show. They held my job. I went and did my treatment. I came back and I started working at Drury Lane. I did AIDA, and they took care of me while I was doing the show. So every theater that I've worked with has been just very loving and unconditionally supportive. So
this is, I mean, the illness, the brain cancer, I mean, it's been with you your entire life. I mean, to say that you're 12 years old, I mean, there's barely a life that you remember without it.
Yeah. There's been new information that's come along in this last year, that, you know, when you come to the concert, there's more information that's available to you. But essentially, the first two lesions were not actually cancerous, in quotes. They were benign, but they've been in the same place for me every time, left frontal lobe. And both craniotomies removed those lesions, and then that third lesion proved to be cancerous. So essentially, my doctors have said, I've been fighting this my entire life,
yeah,
and
right.
this third one just happened to be cancer. Geneticists say that everybody's born with this particular gene, and it's about what you eat and this and that and the other. And, you know, you can split hairs about that. But at the end of the day, it's about what you do with what you're given and mm-hmm. how you fight and battle through what you're given. And for me, this conversational concert is how I fight through and how I battle.
I mean, to be the fifth benefit concert you've done. And it's interesting because it's not just, you know, to raise money for your situation. I mean, you really go out to say this is to benefit cancer research for all that go through cancer. Talk about how important it is for you to be a spokesperson for people who are going through what you go through.
The concert itself, all of the proceeds from the tickets sold to the donations to the raffle to everything that's raised there is split equally down the middle. And half of it goes to the American Brain Tumor Association, and the other half goes to the American Cancer Society. Nobody is paid. Everybody that comes and plays and sings, they donate their time. And we give of ourselves that night on an off night for all theater people. That's our
weekend night.
And we come there and we just purge our souls. And we tell our stories in song and how that journey, whatever it is, not just, it started out about my cancer, but it's now become about any medical journey or any journey about even an unforeseen illness, depression, sadness, even those things that are sometimes happy, you know, people get engaged. They get so mired down in the planning that they don't actually celebrate the joy of that. It becomes so big that it becomes bigger than them. So it's about anything that you're going through that you have to actually acknowledge it, to get through it, to understand that it's happening to you so that you can figure out how to accept it and learn to live with it and through it.
I mean, that your story then so aptly put the idea of this not just being an illness but a journey,
mm-hmm.
I mean, because this is something that has been with you since the age of 12. You know, when you think to that moment, when you think about, you know, having the foresight and the philosophy, really, to say this is a journey and I need to accept it and this is what's happening with me, When does that happen? I mean, at 12 years old, you can't be that, you know what I mean?
Absolutely
you can't be
not.
That spiritual
oh,
yet.
Oh, no,
when,
no.
I mean, talk about the early, let's go back. I mean, let's talk about the early, I mean, how hard was it to be 12 years old and to be in a situation where they want to do a craniotomy?
At 12 years old, I don't think that I realized the magnitude of what was really going on.
Of course, right?
At 12, I think for me at 12, when I think back on it, and they said they were going to cut my head open, I said, you're going to take away half of my brain and I'm going to be stupid. Because you're going to take away half of what makes me smart. And when I woke up and I was in what used to be Children's Memorial on Fullerton, which is now right, over here right, around the corner, right. I was still me, you know. And, you know, of course, there's lots of medication and there's seizures that also accompany what goes along with having a craniotomy. And then in 2010, when an MRI showed what wasn't scar tissue, the doctor did the MRI on Monday and I came back Tuesday for the reading and he said, I need you on my table this afternoon. And I said, that can't happen. I have three children and I have to figure out what to tell them and how to deal with that. And he said, well, then I need you on my table tomorrow. And I said, okay, well, let me go home and figure out how life is going to function if I'm on your table tomorrow. So at 12 years old, no, I wasn't that aware. And I didn't know. But as a mother in 2010, I was aware. And I needed to explain to my children who were much younger then, who are now 22 and you know, soon to be 17 and 11. I needed to explain to my babies, this is what's happening. This is what's going on with mama. This is where we are. I was much more aware of my situation and what could happen. And then in August of that same year, for me, I think I was in a place where I wasn't really ready to accept that soon after coming off of a table, you're actually telling me this is where we are again. So I ran. I fled in every possible way that a person could flee. I fled emotionally. I fled spiritually. And I literally got on a train and ran away. And I ran away to Arizona and I hiked the Grand Canyon and said, okay, I'm in this cavern now and nobody can see me. I hid from my community and I hid from, you know, my theater community and I didn't tell anybody. And a dear friend who's going to play the benefit for me, Doug Peck, said, you have to tell someone if you're going to work, because if something happens to you, we need to know how to take care of you. And the first show that I did was Aida at Drury Lane. And I shared what was going on with my then director and the gentleman at Drury Lane just embraced. And that was when I shared my story. Mm. And it wasn't until 2013, when I was working at the Mercury Theater, that this story became a journey that I realized I couldn't take alone. Yeah. I have to do it with other people.
I mean, there's something to be said about being able to share community around you, whether it's family or other people around them. That's a big part of not just the experience of being ill, but the healing. And then secondly, song. I mean, you have a whole career. And here's what we're going to do. Let's take a quick break.
Yeah.
Stay on time tonight and get to a spot where we can talk about how music has helped you through this, because
Absolutely.
It's played a huge role. I mean, from being a backup singer to what you did on stage, you talk about Aida, but also Dreamgirls and how great 2016 was for you and how you continue to do it.
Okay.
Donica Lynn in studio. She's got a big show. Today's a Good Day, Walk With Me, a benefit for anyone touched by cancer. It's coming up June 26th at the Mercury Theater in Lakeview. We'll continue our conversation and hear some music from Donica Lynn coming up here on The Download. Stay with us. My guest tonight at the big table and download, Donica Lynn. She's got her actress. She's a mother. She's also a cancer survivor, and she is doing the benefit, the fifth benefit for cancer at the Mercury Theater in Lakeview. It's called Today's a Good Day, Walk With Me. It's a benefit for anyone touched by cancer. We're talking about your journey. And you know, as I sort of teased out before we went to break, the idea of how what you use to tell the story, but also in a way how you cope. And music has sort of been that place for you.
Music is indeed that place. As an actor, as a mom, I sing to my kids, of course. But as an actor, music plays a big deal in what I do as a musical theater performer. And the village is always listening to music. So the concert itself is a conversational concert. And it's broken up into four parts: diagnosis, treatment, aftercare, survival. No matter what your journey is, medical, whatever it is.
Those are the four areas.
And I pick songs in the village, the people that are involved, involved, whatever they're listening to, whether it's Christian music, musical theater, rock, pop, whatever it is, we take those songs and they have definitive meanings when you're listening to them in your car. But those songs also become a part of the journey mm-hmm. because it's not just your journey alone. It belongs to the person who bakes a pie across the hall and brings it to you, or who makes soup so that you don't have to worry about cooking for your family, or so that you don't have to worry about cooking. It belongs to so many people other than yourself, hence the walk with
yeah,
me.
Right.
You can't do it alone. It belongs to the doctors and the nurses. So the conversational concert is just that, and the music helps get you through. And the song that we'll play for you in a minute, Big White Room, is how my daughter was coping through my first round of treatment. It felt like everything was sterile, that all we were stuck in was this white room with no walls and no windows, and nobody could hear us and nobody could see us. And we were screaming and we were stuck, and we were stuck on opposite sides of this wall, and we couldn't see or hear one another. But it's how we also found each other right. through this wall. So music has been a huge component of how I get through. When I'm going through my MRIs, that's what I'm listening to in headphones, music, so you don't hear this machine making this noise. When you're getting your chemo treatment, you can talk to anybody. When you're sitting there, you're listening to music, you know. It's in an elevator when you're going to the doctor, or when you're going anywhere. Muzak in an elevator. There's always music playing in your life. So it's not just a coping mechanism. It's a way to calm you. There's serenity in music, yeah. and it helps you.
Donica Lynn in studio tonight. Let's hear some of the music. Let's hear the track. You brought along a guitarist. Dave Budrus is here. Dave, thanks for playing. We appreciate it.
He's going to play on Monday at the concert.
And he's going to be at the concert, which is Monday the 26th. It's called Today's a Good Day, Walk With Me, a benefit for anyone touched by cancer. It's at the Mercury Theater in Lakeview. So let's go ahead and hear Donica Lynn here live on The Download.
Sitting in a big white room alone, tilt my head, feel the tears fall. Down. Close my eyes to see in the dark. Feel young, broken, so scared. Ooh, I don't wanna be here anymore. Wanna be somewhere else, normal and free. Like I used to be. But I have to stay in this big wide room with little old me. I'm going crazy. I'm losing my mind. I'm going crazy in this big wide room. I'm going crazy, I'm losing my mind. I'm going crazy in this big wide room of mine. Sitting in a big white room alone, close the door, don't want the pain to come in. No, 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 no. Clench my fist and try to stay strong. Feel sick, my heart is beating out of control. Can I run faster than you? I wanna feel my body again, feel my wind against the air. But I have to stay. Big white room, 'cause no one else cares. I'm going crazy, I'm losing my mind. I'm going crazy in this big white room of mine. this big white room of mine. Everybody's looking at me. Everybody's staring at me. What do I do now? I smile. Everybody's looking at me. Everybody's staring at me. What do I do now? Smile, yeah. I'm going crazy. I'm losing my mind. 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 Everybody's staring at me. Everybody's looking at me. What do I do now? Smile.
That's great. Donica Lynn in studio tonight. She will be the host and headliner of her fifth benefit for cancer, the Mercury Theater in Lakeview. It's called Today's a Good Day. Walk with me, a benefit for anyone touched by cancer. We will talk more with Donica, which is a great performance, about the benefit, about her cancer, but also more about the music. And that's really, as I hear the song and hear the passion, there's much more to talk about. The 2016 Jeff Award winner, Donica Lynn, in studio tonight. Let's take a break, get an update on tonight's news, and we'll come back. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It's a download here at 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me tonight at the big table, Donica Lynn, actor, singer, mother, cancer survivor, the 2016 Jeff Award winner for her tremendous performance in the musical Dreamgirls, which is at the Porchlight. She was named 2016 Person of the Year in Chicago Theater by Chris Jones and the Tribune last year, of course. And a three-time brain cancer survivor, essentially lesions and tumors and craniotomies and some scary stuff, especially as she continues. I mean, radiation, chemotherapy, the latest tumor, it shrunk, or it's being monitored, if
mm-hmm.
you will.
Yeah.
You know, we talked right before the break, I mean, because the reason you're here is for the benefit concert that's coming up on Monday, the fifth benefit concert you've done for cancer at the Mercury Theater in Lakeview. You know, music has this way, and you played right before the break, but this concept of being not just a way for you to express yourself, as that song did, but a way for you, as you said, to distract yourself or to be a companion with you or to be representative of the village, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about your work on stage, because, you know, you, through all of this, whether it's being a backup singer in bands or being an actor on stage in Chicago, you work and you continue to work, you know, and you even mentioned earlier about the situation when you went to the director when you were doing Aida.
Mm-hmm.
How important is it to be on stage, to continue the work when you're going through something like your illness?
It's very important. It's important, first of all, because I need to be able to show my children that nothing gets in the way, that mommy is not a quitter, and no matter what, you have to fight. You have to fight that nothing is bigger than you. That's first and foremost, that you have to come from inside yourself with something stronger than what's trying to keep you down. And in the world in which we live, there's always going to be outside forces, but you have to have something in you, innately planted in you, that says, I can be bigger than this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I write on my mirrors when I'm working at a theater, I'm bigger than my illness. I'm bigger than my illness. And I say, on the smallest scale, if a hand model breaks a fingernail. She can't work until that's healed. It's, I joked in the green room, it's not about going and getting a fake nail and putting that on and going back to work. For her, that's large. There's no small hills and big mountains. It's about being able to really, really understand inside you that there's something that, that rises you up. So for me, it's about showing them that I'm capable of that. Working is important for me because it's not about the finance. It's about being able to show my community that who that believes in me and who cherishes so much my children. And they give so much strength to me when I have those moments, because I do have them.
I was going
to
ask.
I have those moments where the smile is not there. I have those moments where I say, I really need y'all to just give me a push right now because I just don't feel it right now. I can't find it. I need to be able to show them that I can do this. And it's about being able to give something back to them. It's about being able to say I'm capable of doing what my gift gives me the ability to do. And if your gift is being able to talk to people over the radio and give them a word, then you do that. And if my gift is song, if my gift is extemporaneous speech, I'm able to put all of that together with this concert and stand up there in front of a group of people and say, you don't have to feel weird or odd because you're not okay, because it's okay not to be okay. It's really
okay. Did that take a while for you? I mean, the hardest part about just reading your story, is that how young this started, to say 12 years old.
At 12,
I don't want to keep harping on
no,
that.
No, no, it's okay.
But the concept of, to recognize that, to feel the strength in the room, to feel your words, and to recognize that this has been a full life's journey for you.
I didn't realize it at 12. I didn't realize it at 18. I don't even think I realized it in my 20s. And I've been acting professionally for 20 plus some odd years now. In 2013, when we did the first benefit, I don't know that I actually really understood it and understood the power of it. I knew what it was capable of, but I don't think that I actually really, really understood the lengths that it could reach.
Yeah.
Until I looked out and saw how affecting it was, because it's like this little spark that touches so many people. And like I said, it started out as my journey of cancer, and then it's morphed into this journey about any medical journey be taking, or any journey you're taking, even on a job.
Well, let me ask you, because, you'd be a perfect person to inspire people who may be listening, who were going through their own journey, their own medical situation, their illness. I mean, it's for you to be able to reflect and write on the mirror when you take a job or talk about you're bigger than your illness, to have the wherewithal to put together benefits and talk about, together the village we carry. That comes with the fact that there have been ups and downs in this challenge.
Absolutely.
That you haven't always been in a way that you're like, I'm stronger than this.
Mm-mm.
There are things in this journey to overcome brain cancer that have taken you to the depths.
Oh, they've taken me very, very low. When the initial diagnosis came, I wasn't prepared for that. And 2 years afterwards, I was ready to give up and start making plans to make certain that my children were taken care of. And I wasn't ready to deal with the mortality of it all. And I made arrangements to make certain that my children were going to be okay. And I sat down and had a conversation with my children that mommy might not be here. And that's a hard conversation to have with your oldest child. But when you're looking at the face of your 6-year-old or your 7-year-old and your 10-year-old, and, and my oldest now is 22 and my youngest now is about to be 11 and my middle child is about to be 17. But we're talking about 6. And she's looking at me and she's saying, well, what happens? And we're going to therapy because she's not ready to understand that mommy might not survive the brain cancer. And we walk in this 5K every year for brain cancer. And my sister and I, we sing the national anthem every year. And she makes these little signs, go, mommy, beat the brain cancer. Go, mommy, beat the brain cancer. And she's now accepted it, but back then, it wasn't okay to not be okay. She wasn't ready to deal with that. And she'd get angry. Right. She'd get angry at me, and she'd say, you're not fighting hard enough. You're not doing everything you can. And now we're in a better place. But back then she was mad. She thought that there was something that I could do, and I'd feel let down.
It was about
I'd
control,
feel like I was
right?
letting myself down because I wasn't doing more for her. So no, there were not always good days. There weren't. And I would get mad. I'd get mad at the doctors. I'd get so angry. And I'd say, do more. Do something better than what you're doing. So I think maybe by the time we got to the third concert, I was finally in a place where I said, okay, guys, now we're doing something. And now I'm starting to feel better. And I'm starting to feel uplifted. And everybody within the construct of the benefit who plays and who sings at some point in time has dealt with headaches that they weren't really sure what was going on. And they'd call and they'd say, I'm not sure what's happening, but I'm glad that I can call you and talk to you about it, because they have a go-to and they have a place now. And I encourage people to just listen to their bodies, whatever it is.
Donica, do you find yourself, I mean, now, I mean, you're going on the fifth, you're here on the radio talking about your story, the fifth benefit's coming up on Monday. I mean, do you think differently about your mortality? I mean, in the way that this has, you've had to do this three times, where you've had to have these, I mean, just it's heart-wrenching to hear your story about talking to your kids. But as you get older and you get to a spot where, yes, the tumor's shrinking, but at the same time, you've had to have those difficult...
Do you think differently about it? I do. I recognize and understand that the next day isn't promised. And because of that, like I said earlier, the days that are good days are really, really good days. And we do our best to live each day to the fullest, as cliche as that may sound. But we also acknowledge what's going on and we accept it. And in that, we also, for me, I don't just accept it. I acknowledge it and I actually respect it more. And that's a very difficult thing to say. And it sounds strange, but I respect the illness that I have, because if I don't, I won't give it its just due in terms of making certain that I take the meds on time and rest as much as I'm supposed to, because in as much as the doctors can do, I have my responsibility to it. So I do think of my mortality differently, whereas some people go through life every day, well, you know, I know I'll wake up tomorrow. I don't know that, you know, and my daughter doesn't know that. So when I rest too long, she'll come and, hey, are you sleeping there? Are you napping? Well, all right, get up now. What are you doing there? You know, it's easy to laugh about now, but it wasn't always easy. And now we're in a place where if tomorrow doesn't come, we're okay now, because we've had time to settle. We've had time to deal. We've had time to rest. No one's giving up, but we've dealt with. We have now accepted, progressed. We've gotten through to get to whatever that next step is.
I mean, I hear those things. It's so powerful to hear it because, you know, like you said, I mean, there's a lot of people, myself included, that probably take for granted the idea that tomorrow's going to come. You know, I mean, obviously something can happen in any situation, but being faced with life-threatening illnesses, especially ones that don't have great prognosis. I mean, the diagnosis of brain cancer is not one that you wish upon, you know, your worst enemies.
Yeah.
You just asked a question about, you know, how do you prepare yourself to accept it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess that's the issue. As someone who doesn't have it, I don't have that cancer in my life.
Mm-hmm.
But for someone who has that expertise, who's been there, how do you accept it? What is it that takes you there, and how do you view it moving into the next phase of your life?
Every single day, you accept it every day when you wake up.
Do you have to like mantra it? Do you have to say something, or it's just there?
It's there. It's with you every single day. It's with you like your eyes, you know, like someone who has limbs every day. It's part of your everyday existence, like you breathe, like a breath. And literally, it is an acceptance every day when I wake up. It's not a mantra. It's part of my everyday existence, mm-hmm. as my children are. So I have this. This is what I'm dealing with today. So the meds are part of my morning routine, my evening routine. It is a part of my life, and it is as important to me as my children are. It is as important to me as making certain that I get to work on time. And that acceptance is something that is so important to me. It is important to my daughter. When I'm not at home, she'll call and say, make certain you take your meds when I'm working. You know what I mean? It is literally a part of every single day of my life. So to make certain that I accept it, I have to just make it a part of my everyday acceptance. So it's not a blanket acceptance. Right. It's an everyday walk, hence a journey, a daily journey.
The show is on Monday. It's called Today's a Good Day, Walk With Me. It's a benefit for anyone who's touched by cancer. It's at the Mercury Theater in Lakeview. It's going to be hosted and headlined by Donica Lynn, the Jeff Award-winning actor, musician, mother, and cancer survivor, who's in studio tonight. So would you be able to play one more for us to take us out? What are we going to hear?
Okay, so this song has never been done at a benefit, but because music is such a healing instrument, I started out, of course, singing in church, but I love jazz music so much.
There's so much I got to ask you. Anyway, go ahead.
And I have had the opportunity to sing background for some really great people. And this gentleman sitting next to me is one of the finest musicians I know. And I love this song. And because you're going through any kind of medical journey or just any journey in life, even your job, you may hate the people you work with, but you'll go find a good song. I think this is one of those songs.
Dave Budrasan, acoustic guitar. Donica Lynn, take it away.
Never know how much I love you. Never know how much I care. When you put your arms around me, I get a fever that's so hard to bear. You give me fever. When you kiss me, fever. When you hold me tight, fever. In the morning and fever all through the night. Sun lights up the daytime, the moon lights up the night. I light up when you call my name, and you know I'm gonna treat you right. You give me fever when you kiss me, fever when you hold me tight, fever in the morning and fever all through the night. Captain Smith and Pocahontas, they had a very mad affair. When her daddy went to kill him, she said, oh, daddy, oh, don't you dare. He gives me fever with his kisses, fever when he holds me tight, fever. I'm his missus, daddy, won't you treat him right? Ooh. Romeo loved Juliet, and Juliet, she felt the same. When he put his arms around her, he said, oh, Julie, baby, you're my flame. Thou givest fever with your kisses, fever with thy flame in youth. Fever when you kiss me, Julie, I burn forsooth. Now you've listened to my story, and here's the point that I have made. Chicks were born to give you fever, be it Fahrenheit or centigrade. We give you fever with our kisses, fever when we hold you tight. Fever, oh, fever all through the night. Everybody's got the fever. This is something we all learn. Fever isn't such a new thing. What a lovely way to burn. 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 What a lovely way to burn.
Donica Lynn, everybody. Here we go. That's Michigan Avenue out there. You developed a crowd. That's great. Donica Lynn, actor, musician, Jeff Award winner, a mother, brain cancer survivor. She is going to be headlining and hosting the fifth benefit for cancer at the Mercury Theater in Lakeview this Monday, June 26th. It's called Today's a Good Day. Walk with me. It's a benefit for anyone touched by cancer. Donica, I can't thank you enough for being my guest tonight and sharing your story here on WGN Radio. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for letting me come on, and we hope to raise a lot of good money for the American Brain Tumor Association and the American Cancer Society, and all those proceeds, that's where they're going to go on Monday.
That's an inspiring story. Donica Lynn, check her out at the Lake... at the Mercury Theater in Lakeview coming up on Monday. Yeah, I mean, it's something that if you're not going through it, and there's a lot of people who text in tonight saying they are going through it, it's hard to fathom that strength and all the issues that go with it. I mean, think about that. I mean, the acceptance and acknowledgement and the respect of a lifelong illness, one that doesn't have a great mortality rate. I mean, you unfortunately have to stare, you know, death in the face. But she was to explain that and to do it, the other thing too, Pete, that really gets me is like, I mean, the robbed sort of innocence of the whole thing, to be in that position since such a young age.
Yeah.
And for it to continue to come back and to continue to be part of her life, and for her to be able to accept that it will be and be able to recognize it and to use the gifts that were given to her to help others. I don't know. It's a great story.
Mm-hmm.
It's really great.
And even better, for a few brief moments, I've gotten, you know, she gives me fever in my head more than fooling. So just for that alone, for that exchange.
I know, from fever to fooling. You took away my transition line. From fever to fooling. Fever to fooling. Now, coming up here after the 9 o'clock news, Phil Cullen from the band Def Leppard. I have so much Def Leppard trivia that's swirling around in my head from a day and a half of trying to absorb the Def Leppard story. Did you know that they are only one of, I think it's three bands, and I don't know who the other bands are, it's probably U2 or AC/DC or something, that have had two different albums go diamond?
Yeah, I remember you mentioned that to me a couple days ago.
Yeah,
and I was like, what is diamond? I didn't even know that
platinum.
It was a thing.
It's over 10 million records sold. And so Pyromania and Hysteria both have over 10 million records sold. So Pyromania is going to be your Photograph, Fool, and Rock of Ages.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the musical. And then Hysteria is going to be your Hysteria, Pour Some Sugar on Me, Love Bites, that kind of stuff. And then they've got High and Dry, which is...
10 million.
I know. So overall, 100 million plus records have been sold. Def Leppard records have been sold.
I'm sure I have a few cassettes.
I know, right? I could just smell that.
Cassettes and CDs, probably.
You unwrap a cassette, you smell that. It's, you know, it's Def Leppard, and it's going to be a more clear, you know, it's a clear, it's not the white tape anymore. It's gone to the clear for Hysteria.
Oh yeah,
you said smell that. Almost smells like violet. It smells purple. It's got a purple smell. Def Leppard. That's when you open a tape
and you open up the little book to read the liner notes. They're really small. You have to unfold like 12 little sheets of paper.
Think of the technology alone, where you're like, well, what respect for the liner notes. You're like, let me get the magnifying glass out to see who played bass on Rocket. Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. It's hard to believe that it's been 30 years since one of the biggest records in rock music was produced. I'm talking about the album Hysteria and, of course, the band Def Leppard.
Yeah.
The British metal band's produced 11 studio albums and has sold 100 million of them, which is crazy. Think of all the music, the songs, Pour Some Sugar on Me, Love Bites, Photograph, Rock of Ages, Foolin', Hysteria, Let's Get Rocked, and so many more. For all the triumphs of this band, Def Leppard has seen their share of tragedy as well, but it hasn't slowed them down. They're currently on tour and coming back to Chicago this weekend for a show at the Hollywood Casino Amphitheater in Tinley Park. They will rock the stage with Poison and Tesla, and they'll be releasing a 30-year anniversary deluxe box set edition of Hysteria coming up in August for the anniversary. Joining me tonight is guitarist Phil Collin. He's also known as the Shirtless Wonder. Collin has also written a memoir called Adrenalized: Life, Def Leppard, and Beyond, and he joins us now. Phil, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Pleasure. Absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Coming back to Chicago to play, I mean, you're playing Tinley Park. Talk about, you know, the band's been here so many times. I was just looking at all of the different amphitheaters and places that you've played. What are your fondest memories of bringing Def Leppard through Chicago?
Well, you know, it's the home of the blues, electric blues, you know, when it actually, you know, Chicago yeah. blues and everything. And that's really where everything kind of started off anyway, the Delta blues. And they went to Chicago and it turned into something else and influenced something else. So always really special, you know, just based on that and so much more as well. We've had such great shows in Chicago. We actually played the night of the Y2K, you know, when they said everyone said the world's gonna end and that, you know, we were actually playing, I think, the Rosemont, you know,
right,
that night. And it went great. You know, everyone else had a pretty rough time that night, I think. You know, everyone said that no one turned up to a lot of the shows, but we had a outstanding night in Chicago. So there's so many, you know, just great memories of just being in Chicago, yeah. you know, sitting down there by the water and stuff like that. Last time we were there, it's just great, and we just love flying. And obviously the crowds, you know, keep showing up. It's amazing.
Well, I know myself, just growing up in the area, I mean, it was, you get the golden ticket if you go see Def Leppard in the summertime coming through. It's amazing to think it's been 30 years since the record Hysteria. Take us back to that summer. I mean, you guys were coming off of Pyromania. You had success. People were anticipating what was next. Take us to that moment. Take us to, you know, the studios and putting together Hysteria and what you guys thought you were going to get out of it.
Okay, so the main thing, you know, we had such huge success with Pyromania. Our producer, Mutt Langer, said, everyone else is making Pyromania Part 2. We mustn't do that. So we just got to make something even more special. I mean, his whole thing was do a rock version of Thriller, you know, where it would kind of cross over into the pop market, you know, top 40, which it did. You know, we had 7 singles off of it, and just the approach was different. He said, we've got to work harder, the songs have got to be better, they've got to be more kind of universal in general. They can't just be like the rock thing. It has to be that and so much more. So you know, it worked. I mean, it really did. We listened to his whole philosophy on it, and you know, he wrote all the songs with us and had this absolute plan what this record should sound like. And when we first released it, a lot of people didn't like it. They didn't understand it. They go, well, it's, you know, it's not rock and it's something else. They didn't quite get it. And then, you know, Pour Some Sugar on Me come out, and
yeah,
you know, it became a hit in the strip clubs, actually. All the strippers started, you know, requesting it in the Florida local radio stations. And it just went on from there, you know. It kind of just, and obviously our biggest album. And now looking back at it, it was so diverse. It was, you know, it had all these singles on, but it was a rock album. It was a pop album. And it was like Thriller, you know, that wasn't just to the R&B market. That crossed over into so many different genres for Michael Jackson. And, you know, and it was the biggest album of all time at that point. And so, you know, we had a blueprint, and that was really it. Mutt Lange's kind of blueprint to, you know, Michael Jackson Thriller, and it worked a treat.
And you think about that record, and a lot of what Def Leppard has done throughout the years, but when you think back to that time, you think about the production, you think about the guitar, you think about you and Steve Clark and creating that sound, which is now known as the Def Leppard sound. Talk about that experience, about being in the studio and learning to essentially, you know, be able to play off each other and create a richer, more thorough guitar sound.
Steve was always into not wanting to sound like everyone else. And everyone, especially with two guitars in their bands, they follow a stock or a standard kind of philosophy, you know, when they go and record. And it's kind of boring, you know. So Steve was always like, you know, if we had an orchestra, actually taking a kind of leaf out of Brian May from Queen's book, you know, he just multi-track like crazy, you know. So we would do that. We had two guitar players, and we never really played the same thing. One would be playing you know, Steve had this thing called harmony chords, which on a keyboard or you know, an orchestra, you do that all the time. But, you know, with guitar players, they don't necessarily do that. And then, you know, with Mutt Lange involved, you know, you'd have these, you know, counter melodies and counter rhythms and grooves all going off. So there's so much to do within the confines of a rock kind of format that you could actually do and no one was actually doing. So that's what we developed, me and Steve, yeah. And along with Mutt as well, obviously, just made this kind of wall. And the whole thing, you know, you mustn't lose the melody. You know, you can get gratuitous. And I hear a lot of bands, you know, they have all these harmonies and stuff and you lose the melody. But that's always got to stay true, you know, and you just kind of get around that and just make it interesting. We had so much kind of ear candy going off. But the approach actually really kind of solidified and we got our own sound, and all of a sudden it had this thing that no one else had, and that was the dual guitar thing. So it was awesome. We to this day we still do that, you know.
Yeah, you know, a lot of documented about trying to retain that sound after Steve's untimely passing. Talk about that. I mean, you being part of the Terror Twins and having this relationship with another guitar player in a band and creating a sound that really is hard to replicate. Talk about what it meant to you, because I know it was a tough time for you, not only losing a friend, but being in a band with expectations to continue that sound.
So we never really thought from a band point of view. I mean, Steve was my best friend, so it was all of us, actually. It was never really about it. And when Rick had his accident as well, it was never really about, well, what about the band? You know, do we think about that? It was always about the family, the, you know, the personalities in that. So that always kind of preceded everything else. And the band and the music kind of just fell in naturally. And I think that was one of the reasons why we're still around. You know, it's kind of, it's us first, and then we're lucky to kind of, it works in a musical kind of sense as well. And I think, you know, with a lot of other bands, you know, they argue, they have all this other stuff going off. Mm-hmm. And it kind of influences that. You know, with us, it's a joy. You know, it's a real joy to play this music that we've written. You know, just been writing a new song over the weekend, and we hope to have some stuff out for next year. And I'm thrilled with it. I'm thrilled with writing. I'm thrilled with, you know, playing it to the rest of the guys in the band. And just kind of, it works a lot different to other bands and the way they function. You know, I just produced the new Tesla album, and the way we approached that was exactly that way. I basically joined the band for a year and a half while we were on tour, and we've had such the best time, you know, just being creative and being totally inspired by each other. And that's the way to do it, I think, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's instead of sitting in a studio, you know, and yeah, approaching right. it different with, you know, it's horrible. So when you get inspired, it's a completely different thing. And that's really what we had with the Def Leppard thing. And even when Steve passed, he was still part of the band, you know, massively. He still is, you know. And it's, you know, I think about him all the time. And even like musically as well, he's still part of the whole thing.
Steve and also Rick's accident, which was highly publicized, of course, because he lost an arm. What I hear about and I read about when I think of Def Leppard is, like you said, loyalty and family. There was no push to push Rick out of the band. There wasn't, you know, you want to, like you just said, you still honor Steve. You still consider him to be part of the band. Talk about how important it is for you to honor your friendships and how that plays into the Def Leppard legacy.
It's why we're here. I mean, it's the one thing, you know, everyone goes, well, how come you guys, you're still around and you have this integrity and what's that all about? And that's what it is. We put that first. And I think if you put kind of a business plan before a friendship human plan, you're going to run into problems. And we've never had that. You know, we've always, like when Rick had his accident, we're like, dude, what do you want to do? And he said, I'm going to practice on the edge of my bed and, you know, I'm going to use this foot instead of this limb. And it's like, well, okay, you're on. And then he, you know, he learned to play drums. He learned to do a lot of things. You know, he learned to tie shoelaces, you know, cut a loaf of bread, all this crazy stuff that you know, we take for granted. And then when he was ready, he said, okay, I'm good to go. He initially wanted to take another drummer out as well, but we rehearsed with one and done like, I think we didn't even get to do one gig because the guy missed his flight. And it just worked out. And you know, that you put that first, and it's funny how everything falls into place. And that certainly did with us. And again, going back to this tour that we're on now, it's been ultra successful, you know, us, Tesla, and Poison. And I've actually been saying, you know, the reason it's kicking is it's a celebration of integrity. It's all three bands – is pretty much original members. It's not like a karaoke version of Poison.
Right.
It's the same four guys that came out, and with Tesla, it's the same guys. And, you know, apart from Steve, it's the same guys that brought you Pyromania and, you know, Hysteria. So it's loyal to that. And I think that there's a reason why that's successful. And it really comes down to integrity. We really mean it. And I think everyone kind of sees that. It's not kind of this kind of fake, kind of washed out version of these bands. It's
well,
the real deal.
I think of integrity, you know, I'll be honest. I mean, I went yesterday and today to say I'm very excited to listen to Def Leppard. I put on my Apple Music and my Spotify, and there's no Def Leppard. I mean, there's other little tracks here and there, and there's a couple re-recorded tracks. And I started digging into the story, and, you know, in a way that you mentioned integrity, you don't like the deal that was given to you by the record company or by the streaming sites, and you said, you know what, instead of putting all of our great stuff that we've accrued over the years on Apple, we'll start to re-record it. Talk about your relationship with the new digital world and trying to keep that integrity.
Prince was great, you know, with that whole thing. You know, he refused to kind of let that, obviously it came out after he died and everything. But if you believe in your music and you put that first, that, like I said, everything else kind of falls into place. You know, it's like if you cheap out or you sell out, it's pretty obvious. I mean, I would love it if we could come to some kind of deal with our record company where it was a favorable deal to both parties, and then we could release this stuff worldwide, and it'd be really cool. I'd like that. But we'll see. You'll absolutely see. I'm totally happy where we are right now. We're getting new music, and I love the approach of the way that we do that. You know, it's not sellout. It's real, and it is integrity, and that's everything. It really it kind of helps us out. And like I said, it's the reason why people keep coming back to it.
Well,
you know?
I mean, in reading the articles about the deal and the idea that you guys are getting less money than you know, like you're not even getting a 50-50 split with Universal for digital money. I mean, I think every fan, every music lover would understand what Def Leppard meant to Universal Records and to the music industry in the 80s. I mean, you essentially propped it up, you and Bon Jovi and other bands like that. So the idea that you're being treated like a pop star who just is releasing their first record in the digital world is somewhat alarming to me as a music fan.
Thank you. I totally agree with you. And it's like, you know, we're still here. And the other thing is, it would be a joy for a label or a business to have a band that's prepared to promote, tour like crazy, you know, do promo like crazy. And we'd do everything. You know, we actually believe in what we do. And I think, you know, as a business model, and someone, you know, would me personally, if I was a label, I'd go, wow, this is great. These guys are up to doing this. What a great deal for us. So we'll see how that turns out.
Yeah.
But, we promote ourselves because we believe in what we do. And I totally agree with what you just said. It's like there's new bands out there and there's new artists that don't really mean much. They haven't got that rich history and they're not really able to, you know, we played 20,000 people last night and, well, the other night in Salt Lake City, and it's been getting crazy, and it's you know, probably 21,000 or more already in Tinley Park. So it's
crazy.
It's great.
Well,
yeah, it's really, really cool.
Let me ask my last question for you tonight, and you talk about the idea of Def Leppard still being on tour and being able to take care of yourself in the way that you are playing 21,000 people here in Chicago. You know, talk about, you know, as you guys get older and you have to play these big shows that are huge stress on the body, and how do you keep yourself young besides not wearing a shirt?
It depends on who you ask. You know, I stopped drinking 30 years ago. I don't smoke. I don't take drugs. And it really gives me a lot more energy. You know, I'm a vegan and I eat well. I mean, I know loads of vegans who eat terrible, but you know, me and my wife, we kind of eat really well, and it kind of, you get rewarded for it. So, and then, you know, constantly working out, not killing myself, but just enough to keep feeling 20 years old. And I like that. You know, I don't ache. I don't kind of creak when I bend over and any of this stuff. And you know, I'll be 60 this year. And it's and I didn't feel this good. Yeah, like I said, when I was 25, I didn't feel this good. So there's something for that. If you want to get rewarded, you have to kind of take care of your body. You know, it's not really a hard price to pay. It's great. I'd rather this than being at the hospital and being on prescription drugs and God knows what. So yeah, do a little bit of research on what you put in your body and how you treat your body, and you'll be rewarded. So, yeah, that's great. And you get to play in front of all these people. It's like, come on, it's a no-brainer. It's great.
Well, here's to 60 more years. Guitarist Phil Collin is the guitar player for Def Leppard. Def Leppard at the Hollywood Casino Amphitheater in Tinley Park this weekend, Saturday, with Poison and Tesla. Also, this is the 30th anniversary this summer of the record Hysteria. They'll be putting out a box set and a deluxe set through Universal coming up this summer. Phil, amazing to talk to you. Thanks for taking some time out, and good luck on the tour.
Cheers. Thanks.
Something to say. Yeah. There you go. A little Def Leppard for you. Great line right here. So hard to do karaoke. Violetta was like, I do Pour Some Sugar on Me. It's my karaoke jam. I'm like, yeah, but you know what? Joe Elliott and the Def Leppard sound is really hard. I've tried it a couple times in karaoke where I'm like, I'll do Photograph. I'm like, it's so hard. It's a very high register for, you think right off the bat, you're like, Def Leppard, I can nail Def Leppard. But it is a very particular sound. And it was funny because, you know, Phil had mentioned I'd asked about Chicago, and I was thinking about Poplar Creek, you know, or the Rosemont Horizon. And I'm trying to think of other places where Def Leppard would have played in 1987, 1988, right? Because what he said, he's like, oh, I remember playing Y2K. I'm like, oh, awesome, Y2K. And I'm like, that's 2000.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
That's 12 I didn't think about years that. After Hysteria. What are you doing? That's the Free Willy soundtrack time. There was one ballad that Def Leppard did for Free Willy. I forgot what it was. It was either Free Willy 1 or Free Willy 2, where they, another Free Willy, or whatever the second one was, where they had like a, you know, a ballad or something that was on the soundtrack. And that was their big hit in the late 90s or whenever Free Willy came out. And so they were like, yeah, or maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's not Free Willy. It was something like that where they were somewhere in the doing a soundtrack for a kid's movie or something. And so let's, I'm like, Y2K. So that would have been, and he's like, everyone was all worried. So that would have been not only a Y2K show 2000, but it would have been a New Year's Eve show.
Right.
Yeah. That's not what I was looking for. Yeah. I was thinking like, a tour bus broke down right outside Poplar.
Right.
It was me. It was Black Sabbath. It was Poison.
Mutt Lange.
Those are the stories I was looking for.
Yeah.
Ozzy. Nobody could understand him.
Ozzy, Mutt Lange. No. Def Leppard, Poison, Tesla coming to the Hollywood Casino Amphitheater. And I put it on Facebook tonight. I was like, oh, it's so great that, you know, they're going to be on it. So many people responded on it. So I know people have seen Def Leppard or part of it. So, you know what? We'll take a break for the news. Come back. Tell me where you saw Def Leppard and what you were wearing. 312-981-7200. When did you see Def Leppard, and what were you wearing? That's the question. I know the Download Nation will come through on this one. All right. Plan your home improvement and DIY project Sunday mornings on WGN-TV. Watch House Smarts with Lou Manfredini at 10:30, followed by Weekend Workbench at 11. Right now, let's get the news. Where did you see Def Leppard, Rob, and what were you wearing? I have a feel of like a sleeveless leather jacket, you know, with maybe like a ripped T-shirt underneath, some ripped jeans. That's a martyr seeing Def Leppard.
I regret to say I've never seen Def Leppard, but the concerts I did go to, I had the Reebok shoes, the rolled up jeans.
Strong.
With the double collar working.
Ooh.
The double collar flipped up.
Double collar.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, you know, the polo, and then you had another polo underneath it, and I was sharp, man.
That's too sharp.
There was nothing holding me back.
That was your rap name.
Oh, and then the David Letterman look with the wrestling shoes had that too.
That's good stuff.
Rocking it.
All right. We'll find out. We come back. We will find out where you saw Def Leppard and what you were wearing. I'm not a big fan of this one. I know it's hard to understand, but it's another one that I tried on karaoke once. I was like, wow, the range. It's really hard to get at. It's a download here on 720 WGN. We're celebrating Def Leppard. there are great texts that are coming in. Stories of seeing Def Leppard at different points in the area, in the region. You know, they came through at so many different times, and it's so fun to be able to talk about this, reminisce, especially since it's been 30 years, the 30-year anniversary of Hysteria. That's hard to believe, man. I don't want to go right to the cliches of, gosh, you're so old. It's just more like, yeah, I guess that's right. And it also brings me back to a point I don't necessarily want to go back to 1987 with my cool feathered hair on top and permed in the back long hair, because I think like the guitar player from Warrant had that look, and I'm like, that's it, nailed it. It was one of those, like, in the days when I was maybe 13 years old and you could go to the hair salon in town by yourself. Like, I could never, with my 9-year old, I'd never say you could go to the hair salon by yourself. But I'd go to the hair salon and be like, yeah, I want to get this guy's look. You know, it's so ill-advised. I came home, my mom's like, what'd you do? And I'm like, it's just, you don't understand me. Love bites.
I spent a lot of days riding my bike to the arcade.
Yeah.
Chicago Ridge Mall.
Did you go to we went to the True Value in Wonder Lake, and we would get accoutrements for the bike. So the cool handlebar grippers, you know, something cool to put on the back, the kickstand. That's what we do. So make it real cool, real Def Leppard-like.
There was a lot of my friends were into the BMX bikes, and they had the cool, you know, they're like, you know, the Mongoose and the Torkers and the whatnots. And I wanted a BMX bike really bad, and got a Huffy. And Huffy wasn't cool, man.
No. How did you play that one off?
Try to trick it out.
Yeah.
You try to, like, put different things on it.
You were like, I'm OG. I only go for the real stuff. Huffy's real. The Mongoose stuff, that's fad. Huffy, that's real.
And then, like, a jerk, I guilted my parents into it, you know, like, feeling so bad about buying me a bike that they eventually bought another bike, a used BMX bike from somebody. And then I just, like, was at a friend's house. I left it there and, like, never went back to get it. What an ass.
That is an ass move, yeah. 312-981-7200. There's some good stuff here. Okay, so 815 says it was 2006. Def Leppard was touring minor league baseball stadiums. They were at the Modern Woodman Park in Davenport, Iowa. And Brian Adams opened for them and gave an extensive explanation to what the summer of 69 meant. I was wearing black sneakers, jeans, and a black short sleeve Carhartt t-shirt. I think that's a misspelling, but sweating my tail off. Well, that's a pretty standard. 847, saw Def Leppard at Alpine Valley, Rosemont Horizon, UIC Pavilion, and also at the Pauley Pavilion, UCLA, for the 1992 MTV Video Awards. Darn. There you go. All right, on the line, here we go. Now we're getting somewhere. Bill's on the line now. Bill, you saw Def Leppard on the Hysteria Tour.
Yeah, they played Rosemont Horizon in the round.
Oh, come on!
No, if you look up on YouTube, go to Def Leppard in the round, in your face. That was the concert video that they released for that show.
Wow. And it, when they're in the round like that, it's not unlike the Pour Some Sugar on Me video, right, where they're jumping all around on the platforms and things like that. That was in the round.
That was it. That was actually from that. You know, for the Pour Some Sugar video, actually some of that is backstage, but a lot of that concert footage that you see is from that Denver show that they put out on video.
Oh, okay.
That one, Armageddon, there's a couple of them that they did from the actual video or the concert video that they actually set out as just regular music videos. I remember L.A. Guns opened up for them.
Come on.
And
that's
yeah,
awesome.
Talk about, okay,
yeah.
Okay. And it just looked like a bunch of little Nikki Sixes running around the stage because they all had the same hairdo. Okay.
They teased that out, so, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it, you know, Aquanet, I'm telling you what, I missed my opportunity to buy stock in them because the 80s, I would have been a millionaire. Anyway, about what I was wearing. Okay. So I was the geek kid that was trying to be cool when I went to the show. So, you know, you see Joe Elliott with these jeans on and, you know, they've got the cuts and they're frayed and everything like this. So I'm like, I'll do the same thing. So the night before the show, I take a very good pair of jeans.
No.
I cut them up, and I didn't realize that in order to get that, you have to wash them and wash them and wash them. So here I am going to the concert with ridiculously cut jeans.
Fresh.
And all my mom could say to me was, you're not getting another pair.
That's it. That's the last that's the last pair of Cavaricci's you're going to get.
Oh my gosh, yeah,
Bill! That's awesome. That's you just made my night. You made my night because I think I've done that too. I had like the acid wash jeans, and I'm like, I'm gonna cut the knee out of this one. And I'm like, it doesn't look like Joe Elliott. Where's the fray?
No.
Yeah.
No, Joe probably spent like $500 for his hair, and you know, I spent $30. You know.
Yeah, but you have a tremendous experience in the sense that you get to see Def Leppard on the Hysteria Tour at the Rosemont. That's awesome.
You know, it just, you know, when you were talking to Phil, it just brought back a lot of memories. And it was, you know, talk about a band that, you know, no matter what album it is, it'll always throw you back to the time where you heard that album the first time.
Yeah, right, right.
You know, and my question to Phil was, you had a great question of, okay, how are you keeping yourself in physical shape, you know, eating right and you're working out and everything. But you got to think, Joe's voice is his instrument.
Yeah.
What has Joe had to do, you know, and you think about it, you think about Bon Jovi and you think about, let's go to Simon Le Bon from Duran Duran, all of these lead singers that are still around that sound great.
Right.
Okay. What are they doing with their voices? Okay. Let me go back to Bon Jovi. Bon Jovi, I'm not going to pick on the guy, but when you hear him now, live or even on a studio album, it sounds like he's very nasally. Everything is coming through the nasal. Okay? You know,
I wonder.
Joe Elliott.
Yeah.
I'm sorry,
no, I was going to say, I've interviewed enough young musicians who come through on the download and things like that, that at a certain point, I think they recognize that the rock and roll lifestyle, especially for a singer, is a myth. At a certain point, they don't party. You don't see the Joe Elliotts or the John Bon Jovis backstage. It's always the stories of, you know, it's never Steven Tyler, it's Joe Perry. You know what I mean? Like, there's something about it where they put a scarf on their throat and they are up in the hotel room. You know, I could be wrong with Joe Elliott, but he does. I mean, it'd be interesting to ask him that question. Like, if I get a chance to ever talk with him, the idea of how you do, as you get older, protect that instrument. Yeah, it's interesting. All right, Bill.
And you're right. That's a question that I've always wanted to ask a lead singer. And I wish I would have, you know, somebody, at least somebody would have given Vince Neil that same advice, because his voice is gone.
Yeah,
so.
Right.
But yeah, thanks for bringing up the,
right?
the topic. And thanks a lot for bringing Phil on. That was great, yeah. Man.
Thanks, Bill. Thanks for calling, man.
All have right. a great one.
You too. There you go. See? God, he's right, man, with those jeans. He's so right. We all did it. We all messed up a pair of jeans because we're like, let's see. And, you know, to be like, no, this is like, they have a stylist. They have someone who not only teases out their hair, but it's like, let's fix the knee on this jean. You know, left leg is better than right. Let's fix the knee. Here we are at home going, you know, do 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 with a pair of, you know, scissors from the upstairs kitchen drawer, cutting a hole in the Levi's that we bought. That's good stuff. 773 says that they were at the Pavilion in 83-84 warming up Billy Squire. So they opened for Billy Squire. That's awesome. I saw Def Leppard. My only time I saw Def Leppard, I missed it. I kind of joked at the beginning about, you kind of knew the hierarchy of who was popular in your town, of who got to go to the Bon Jovi show or who got to go to Def Leppard. You know, you had a certain, you know, Dixie mm-hmm. Richter, you know, who's going to the Bon Jovi concert. You're like, man, she's so popular. Yeah. She's so hot. She gets to go to the concert. I'm never going to concert.
Yeah.
Which it's not, you know, it means nothing, but when you're in seventh grade, that seems to be the way. But the thing about it, I went and saw Def Leppard at the UIC Pavilion in 2006, maybe somewhere right in there. And maybe it's the same tour that person was talking about, the minor league fields. But the guys,
I assume it was the 20th anniversary of Hysteria,
yeah, somewhere right in there. And it was at USC Pavilion, and it was the guys who were kind of the day drinkers at Lemmings in Bucktown. They had the idea, and I'd lived around the corner. And
good crew.
It was great crew. And you're not going to find a better crew than that. And they're like, Leopard's coming through. Let's get a limo. So we got a limo, and, you know, the email went around, who's in? There's like 10 or 12 people. Buddy Tommy showed up with the Union Jack leather jacket.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like the jean jacket. And so we went, and I got to say, it was amazing to be there. And, you know, as I was kind of joking earlier, the first six songs of the set are the new stuff. And it wasn't until they really sort of got into, you know, Rock of Ages, I think, is when the second half started, where you're like, oh, and then it was just downhill.
That's surprising. You think you got to come out with a couple of heavy hitters.
I think they start with, like, a heavy hitter.
Yeah, and then, like, you know, yeah. Then... All right, we're going to play a couple of new songs, and that's when everybody goes to the bathroom and whatnot.
I think they do, like, Armageddon it. You were getting it. Armageddon it. Yeah. That's how they start. They're like, yeah, that means Hysteria's next. And they're like, here's one off of Def Leppard 2006. And you're like, no, don't do it. Don't play those songs. Yeah, so. But I will say this. A tremendous, tremendous thing, and I remember seeing it, and it blew my mind. Might have been the fact that you're a couple beers in at this point. But they had the stage, and they were playing We Will Rock You right in the house. And it was before the show started.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, the stage is closed and it's dark. And it's doo, doo, tsh, doo. In the middle of the song, the lights go off, right? So you're like, oh, here comes the show. Everyone screams and the lights go off, but nothing happens. You know, it's one of every inevitable at any concert that, especially a big one like that, where the lights go off and you're like, oh, something happened, something shifted. Let's get crazy. So what happened was, it's just quiet, and, you know, through that whole part. And, the, you know, in that song where right before it goes to We Will Rock You, there's a part where it goes, we will duck you. And it's like in that song, there's like a moment where I don't know what hits, like the drum hits or the bass hits in We Will Rock You. Their apparatus, their light apparatus goes off. In this way, like a robot, like almost like a circle. It goes, and it goes to like, it goes to dark, back to dark. So it was like this moment of it, like turned on, like almost like a transformer. Like it turned all the lights on and did this whole thing to the beat on We Will Rock You, and then it closed again. So you're like, Ah, you don't even know what you're yelling about. You're like, no, something happened. Something happened. And when the song is over and there's like the moment, right, I guess the moment right for We Are the Champions, like the way that kind of goes.
Yeah.
The light, one light comes down, and it's Joe Elliott, and he's on stage like, hello, Chicago. And everyone's like, I can't breathe.
Oh, man.
And then they go crazy. And then it's six songs that you never heard of. That was good stuff, man. 630 says you got to use a power sander on the new jeans to get that effect. Oh, okay. 630 says, I'm snorting in my car laughing at the guy in his jeans. So... 224 says, I was too cool to see Def Leppard by the time Hysteria came out.
Mm-hmm.
They were a chick band at that point. Hey, forgive me for knowing what the chicks listen to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't forget Alpine Valley when it comes to rock concerts in the 80s. And I would have had long hair, not teased like the hair bands. This guy's got a chip on his shoulder. He's really judging the hair bands. Levi jean jacket with Zeppelin and Sabbath patches.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Concert tees and jerseys and ripped and frayed Levi's. Absolutely not acid washed. That was for posers.
Yeah.
Hair metal fans.
Yeah.
I don't know.
He's right.
Me, when I would go to a concert, I'd put my jeans on. I'd get the cut in the knees. I put a little rouge. You know, get the makeup on. And you see like Poison on Look What a Cat Dragged In. You know, when you see that album cover and you're like, what's going on here? That's a lot of makeup. That's a lot of foundation. And Ricky Rocket's got a lot of foundation. That was what I would do. 2 hours of just really, really making up the face to then go out and rock out to hair metal. I always thought that was the strangest thing. Anyway. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. Can we take a break? Do we got a break?
Yeah.
Lady Love never smiles. Oh, fooling. Oh, we're having too much fun, man. Greg Flam's here. Swap Meet's coming up at 10 o'clock, which is exciting. Oh, gosh. Oh, good stuff. 312-981-7200. We should just do all Def Leppard paraphernalia. If you got any Def Leppard stuff that you want to see if it's worth anything, Greg and the Swap Meet can help out. What was that? Is anybody out there? Oh, listen to that. That's good stuff. All right. Bill's back. Bill, what? Bill, you got something about Poison? They're on the bill as well.
Yeah. Actually, they're on the bill. And when you were starting to talk to them, it just, you know, my very first concert that I'd ever seen with my friends, I was about 17 at the time, was Quiet Riot. And that was the band that I really wanted to see. And we're standing outside the stage. This is at Star Plaza down in Maryville. And we're standing there, and there's these girls standing around, and they have these 8x10 glossies of these hot chicks, okay? So I'm telling them, you know, oh, wow, this one's cute. Well, they're laughing at me, and I didn't realize why they were laughing. Come to find out, it was a not very well-known band at the time by the name of Poison.
Right. Bobby Dahl, Ricky Rocket, CeCe DeVille.
Yeah. They got on stage, and I'm like, they're dudes. And all my friends were laughing at me because they knew them. They knew the band.
That's,
you know,
hilarious, Bill.
Their music.
Thanks for that. That's awesome. So, that's good.
All right. Thanks.
You know, the best part about that is that that's the most innocuous place that that could happen, Bill. Like, the idea that they go on a big stage and you get to see it and go, oh, I'm so embarrassed. There's other places to be much more embarrassed if that happens. Bon Jovi concert, 773 says, bomb threat delayed the show till 10:30. Didn't get home till 6 in the morning. Wow. 224 says, jean jacket with a giant old-style patch on the back. Riding my, what is it, Kuwahara BMX? Yeah, man. Seven seven three just says, I caught the Eagles at the United Center once. All right, that's not what we're doing. This is All right, we've successfully finished our Def Leppard segment when we're now like, you know who else I saw? All right, coming up, Greg Flam's going to join us. We're going to do the swap meet. If you got something you want to evaluate, memorabilia, collectibles, your junk, Greg is back. It's Wednesday night. Feeling good? Stay with us.
It's time for swap meet. Oh, yeah, here we go. Oh, another man's junk is another man's treasure, like a gold tape measure. When you were a kid and your fingers in your nose, today you're a picker. Oh, it could be comic books or silverware. As long as it's old, has no mold, there's value there. It's time for Swap Meet with Justin Kaufman.
And Greg Flam.
Hey, Justin.
Hey, Greg.
Good
All
to be
right.
Back.
It is time for the Swap Meet sponsored by Wolf's Flea Market. Welcome aboard, Wolf's Flea Market.
Yes.
It's awesome that you come along for the ride. It's good to have you and to have you, the 720 WGN download listener. We are excited to be back. We were off last Wednesday, but we return. Greg at DuPage Picker at Facebook and Twitter, and we are ready to evaluate your collectibles, your memorabilia, your junk.
Yes,
312-981-7200. If you got something that might be laying around the garage or maybe something that you got hanging in the vestibule, if you will.
Right.
You're like, that's where I want to brag about this. I want people to know. Not enough people come to my house to see this painting of Mike Ditka in watercolors
right.
flipping off a fan.
Right.
That's
the mosaic kind of version right. of it, yeah.
Good to see you, Greg.
Great to see you, Justin.
All right,
thanks.
So as you do every week, before we start taking phone calls and texts, we talk about the stuff that you found over the week. I mean, it is summertime now. You get nice weekends. I mean, is this the prime time?
It's on.
Yeah.
I mean, like, the only off day is, like, Monday. But there's garage sales Tuesday through Sunday now. Mm-hmm. And you got every flea market, every subdivision sale, stuff like that. So there's so much going on now. I mean, to the callers or listeners that don't have anything to brag about, take $10 and hit a few garage sales. You will find some stuff.
Consider it to be research.
Right. And there you go. And then you can call in the next week and tell us what you got.
That's awesome. All right. So what did you find this week dancing around town?
Well, I found these old, like, 1959 Movie Life magazines.
Yeah.
I already sold one for $50.
What?
And, Liz Taylor on this one. And there was another one from the 50s and sold for $50. So that's pretty cool for 50 cents, you know, if
yeah,
I
right?
can't beat
oh,
that.
Absolutely.
And the music nerd in me, I brought in the Byrds, Mr. Tambourine Man, because this, actually today, 52 years ago today, this song came out, and it pretty much launched the folk rock revolution back in 1965.
Wow.
So, yeah, so I kind of brought that in. But the big item is the Dennis Rodman
Hypercolor.
And it's not technically Hypercolor brand, but it is that shirt.
That's
and
that
his,
technology,
Yeah, it's
will.
Got that technology in it, and his hair is red in normal temperature, and then if you touch or when you wear it, and if you're, you know,
it working changes.
A body, the hair changes to yellow.
So, like, if you get nervous, it, like, turns to a different color?
Yeah, whatever.
It's like a
whatever.
Mood ring?
Exactly. And those were, you know, where, like, the hypercolor shirts, the shirts themselves would change colors.
Right.
They'd be, like, a purple or a gray,
right.
and they would change.
Oh, I know.
But this just is hair. But I did have a hypercolor shirt back in the 90s. And
Hoping I'm hedging bets with my long-term investments that Hypercolor will return.
Oh, I mean, that anything 90s urban wear is hot right now. If you got
this
know,
is awesome.
Hilfiger jacket or
and,
something.
You know, as Kathy's on the line, we'll get to her in just a second.
Yeah.
But there is something to be said. I mean, as every day has gone by in the last couple of weeks, it has been an anniversary or a celebration of the Chicago Bulls and winning
right.
championships
yep.
or hitting the last shot. Of course, Dennis Rodman, a big part of that. So it is great to see
right.
a hypercolor Rodman staring at me in the studio tonight.
Right, and as Rob mentioned, the
yeah.
North Korea stuff too. So
North
it's all kind of tied
all.
In, you know, saving the world. You
right,
know?
3-1. Of course, that was
one body piercing at a time.
He was born to do. 312-981-7200. Let's go to Kathy. Kathy, what do you want to brag about, Kathy?
Hi.
Hi.
I love your show.
Thank you.
You guys are a lot of fun. Anyway, I've got a 1992 Bulls t-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
It's never been worn. It's got the original tag for the label, and then it's got the shiny thing. This is
right, hologram,
NBA.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was the one with the caricature.
Yeah, it's the one. Yeah, it looks like if you're at Navy Pier and you get your caricature drawn.
Yeah, is
yeah.
it for a championship, like one, the first, second, or third one? Which one?
1992.
So it does it have like the three championship trophies, or
I guess it would be the second one.
Yeah. Okay.
Let me see. I keep it in this bag all the time, but it's. I mean, it is like in pristine condition. Let's see.
And that's how you want it. You got, you know, you never worn with the tags.
Right, right.
So I think you're looking at about 100 to 150 for that. You know,
jeez.
Yeah, because really? Never worn yet. And here we go again with the t-shirt thing. But yeah, people will pay.
People love that.
Yeah, they love any graphic tee, really. You know,
I mean, who didn't have one of those? Who didn't have one?
But the key is you didn't wear it. You know, you didn't take the tags off. Yeah. So that's the best thing.
So 2 years for being pitted out of my
$14.
$14.
There you go. You should be able to get, you know, I'd say 80 to 140 for that.
Wow. Oh, great.
All right. Thanks, Kathy.
It's fun to, I know somebody called last week, so I thought, well, I'm going to take a chance.
I love it. You did it.
Thanks for calling.
Us off on the right foot. Thanks, Kathy.
Thank you.
All right. 312. Okay. Take care. 312-981-7200. We got some great stuff. Let's do this. Let's take a break. And we will return here on the Swap Meet. 312-981-7200. What do you want to brag about? It's the Swap Meet here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wolf's Flea Market. Thank you for coming aboard, Wolf's. We appreciate it. Greg Flam, yes. At DuPage Picker, Facebook and Twitter. Find him there. He's ready to evaluate your collectibles, your memorabilia, your junk. As somebody said, no, hey, don't you evaluate my junk. Someone said that on Twitter.
Different
text.
Story.
We get it. We get it. Let's go to John. John, what do you want to brag about, John? What do you got?
This is John from Schaumburg.
Yep.
I guess I was listening to your radio show, first time I ever called in on anything, and
right.
I guess I told your phone person that I can't remember the year right now. Many years ago, my wife and I were down in Florida on vacation from Schaumburg here, mm-hmm. and this was the year or whatever when the White Sox were getting ready to leave Chicago and move to Florida, and
yeah.
Florida White Sox.
Right. Back, right.
So we were hanging around, I think it was Tampa, St. Petersburg, here and there, and someone rumored, we said, we want some Florida White Sox t-shirts. Well, they don't exist. Wow. Someone steered us to the Chamber of Commerce, which someone was in the building, usually an open on a Saturday. I remember it was a Saturday. We got to a counter where a lady was there, and we kind of insisted, persisted, got a little obnoxious and said, we heard there's t-shirts. The Sox are moving here. Come on.
Right.
She pulled a box out from under the counter and tore it open, and we bought 3 Florida White Sox t-shirts already printed, and I still have them. I never took them out of the plastic packages. They're like white t-shirts with greenish White Sox, Florida White Sox,
okay.
and a little yellow on them. And I told my son to check it out, put them on Craigslist or eBay, and he's so nobody did anything. But
yeah
I got could, 3 of these.
John,
White Sox
let
t-shirts.
Me take this one, Greg. I think that shirt is, my guess is, we said it somewhere in the 70s. I would say a gazillion dollars.
I don't even care how much it's worth, really. It was just unique.
That is so unique. What do you think, Greg?
It's a thing, and right now on. Online, there's only one that I could find, and they're asking $75 for it. And
it's too low.
There was one that sold recently as well, and they only got $15 for
what?
It. But I would think if you price it at $50 to $60, you get some buyers.
Come
for
on,
it.
Man! How could you say we had a 1992 caricature Bulls shirt that everybody had?
Yeah.
That you just said was $150. And then John calls up here with a Florida White Sox that he finagled out of a box at the Chamber of Commerce.
Yeah.
That no one has saw the light of day. That should be worth $1,500.
I would have hoped so, but you got to go with the market. There's already
Come
one on
Internet.
There. There's one on there for $75. So if you want to sell yours, you got to beat that.
I don't like that at all. I don't like it. John,
well,
you got the best one of all
I'm selling,
time.
But I could always take a try at it. But
no, don't sell it.
I just thought it was kind of a unique story how I got them, much less.
Right. Well, if you've got more than one, keep one and sell the other ones and, take your family out to dinner. I don't know.
There, John, wait till everyone recognizes their mistake. And
the Sox do end up in Florida.
Yeah. Just wait a couple years. You're going to make $2,000 off of that. Thanks, John.
Thanks for calling.
Sure.
That was the best story.
Yeah, it was
Come
a good
on,
story.
That's the perfect. That's the way it goes. All right, let's keep going here. Let's go to Alex. Alex, what do you want to brag about, Alex?
Well, now I'm a little scared after I just heard that last price. I thought I had a winner here. My mom had the chance back, I think, 72 or 73, whatever year Elvis was performing at a hotel in Vegas, MGM maybe. She bought the program from the show, and it's a full-color program that has all of his costume changes and black jumpsuit, white jumpsuit.
Yep.
So now I'm afraid you're going to say $15.
You know, you were close. I looked it up, and it was 16 and up. And it's usually the Vegas stuff was usually the Hilton, Las Vegas Hilton, because he had like a you know home. I don't know what they call
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah.
Residency. Right. So, yeah. But yeah, they're like $16 and up, depending on condition. And if you have any extras, I mean, like, were there any flyers that they included with it? I've seen myself, I was able to pick the menu that went with that show. So you can, you know, kind of up the price with that by adding to it.
Hmm. All right. Thanks, Alex.
$15.
I know. Right. It's worth nothing.
That's yeah, it's bogus. Not much because they made so many.
I know. I'd be bad at this. I'd be like, oh, I'll give you $100.
All right. Well, as we've learned, nothing makes sense.
Nothing makes sense. That's right. If we learned anything from the swap meet about the world, Alex, nothing makes sense. Right. Thanks for calling in. All right. 312-981-7200. 630 says, my mother-in-law recently passed. She was a huge camera fan.
Okay.
Any suggestions for where to get a fair price for her stuff? 35mm VHS, lenses galore, digital movie camera, Sony Mavica, 1.3 megapixel, uses 3.5-inch disc.
Yeah, unfortunately, camera lenses are like really, you can get like four of them for like $10 now. I've tried to sell some myself thinking, oh, these are sold and they're going to get a lot of money. Just no. But some of the, you know, like the, I know a Canon, like one shot, those are holding their value at like $40-$50. And that was just like a point and shoot type camera. And those are holding.
Is there any sort of value or nostalgia to the fact that the sort of point and shoot cameras are obsolete at this point? Like the idea that everyone can do it on their phone? Does that make it worth something or worth nothing?
I don't know, other than maybe just the ease of use. And some people just want that. And maybe for elderly people taking photos, it's easy. That's all I can kind of think of. Right. But, yeah, some and obviously the higher end, like, you know, Minolta or the longer lenses, you know, those can keep
the
value.
What was it from the mind of Minolta?
right. But, yeah, that particular one, I'd have to get back to you on that.
Which one was it? Was it Canon that did the Andre Agassi where he would, like, hit the ball and be like,
yeah, Canon EOS.
Was it EOS?
EOS,
yeah. There you go. 708 takes us back to the pop culture realm.
Okay.
It's always a good one because it sparks a lot of interest from everybody. But he or she says, Freddy versus Jason poster signed by Robert Englund.
Wow, I didn't see the signed part, but yeah.
Ooh.
Some of the just Freddy versus Jason stuff can be like $40 and up, but obviously signed can make a huge difference, you know, hundreds of dollars difference, maybe more. So, you know, I have to check that out. And if they want to send a picture, that's great through Facebook or whatever.
Freddy versus Jason poster. I mean, is that just a kitsch? I would think there was a lot of stuff produced for that.
Anything horror movie sells. I mean,
oh, really?
Yeah, scary sells. Just remember that. So it does. The more gross, the more money you'll get for it.
Susan, what do you want to brag about, Susan?
Yes, I have a Michael Jordan jersey signed. It's signed in silver on the two. It is framed with a certificate on the back from a middle school auction. It's dated 1/10/96.
Okay.
There is a name. Let's see. Michael Jordan.
That's
autographed jersey.
Is it number 23?
Yes.
No, because it's 96 right there is right when he was making the, I mean, he would have made the comeback at that point. This would have been the
45.
Like this would have been the year that they were going for their first championship back, 72-10 year.
Yeah.
It is a 23.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Bridgeport Collectibles is on the certificate of authenticity.
Wow. You know, some of these are going for like $4,000, $6,000.
Come on, man.
And they've got them, you know, signed, framed with their certificate. So if you have all that, you're really close to being there. You could just...
would, I mean, if you have the certificate of authenticity, I've heard you before. I don't know if I should believe that it is true, you know, it is real. Just because I have all this.
Yeah,
from
you do have to do a little research on their certificate as far as who did grade it. And then also usually when it's graded, they'll seal it. So is it framed or is it still loose?
It's framed, but it's framed, but it is, you know, a little bit loose in the frame,
sure.
But it is framed.
Yeah, as long as it's clean as the first day you got it,
right.
That's
right.
The big thing. But yeah, see, I would definitely, if you're interested, you got a few grand there. Easily.
Susan, if I were in your family, it would have been a disaster because I would have taken that frame off and I'd be out in the driveway shooting threes
well,
right now.
I can't
right.
believe our son didn't get it out of here. You know, it's just nice. Been sitting forever for all these years, and yep. I'm really shocked he's left.
He didn't wear it
here,
to Lollapalooza? So. Sure.
No, he didn't.
Right. All right. Thanks, Susan.
Thanks for calling. Good job.
Thank you.
That's a winner.
That is.
Yeah, but I mean, she didn't say how much. I mean, she got it. You get a lot of that kind of stuff at auctions
yeah.
or fundraisers for schools.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah, a lot of signed guitar stuff or you know, just signed memorabilia.
Because Jordan will give it because it's for some sort of auction, or his people will say, "Okay, you can have this."
Exactly.
Because they're raising money for the school.
Yep.
You don't really think about 20 years later.
Right.
30 years later. Yeah. 20 years. 20 years. I'm so caught up in Def Leppard hysteria.
Right.
30 years, 20 years. Anyway, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Greg Flamm in studio at DuPage Picker. Here's what we're going to do. We'll take a break. We will get an update from Rob on what's going on in the world. We'll come back, and we'll do the second half of the swap meet. So if you're on the line, stay with us, and we'll get to your texts as well. Stay with us.
It's time for swap meet. Oh, yeah, here we go. Oh, another man's junk is another man's treasure, like a gold tape measure. When you were a kid and your fingers in your nose, today you're a picker. Or it could be comic books or silverware. As long as it's old, has no mold, there's value there. It's time for Swap Meet with Justin Kaufman.
And Greg Flamm.
There I am.
Here we are, sponsored by Wolf's Flea Market. Welcome aboard, Wolf's. Of course,
yes.
Wolf's a big, I mean, it's interesting because we talk about it, what happens outside the Allstate Arena, and not just there, but other places around town. I mean, there's a surging flea market community here in Chicago.
Yeah, and Rosemont is just the biggest I've ever seen. I mean, I take $10, $15 out there, you will find treasures, and you'll be able to call in and talk about them. And and more importantly, it's like a street fair there. It's like there's food. There's 500-plus vendors on some days. I mean, and, you know, like they say on the ad, you'll get your 10,000 steps in for sure. You will definitely get your exercise in. And, you know, just more importantly, it's family run, and it's just, you know, it's just a cool atmosphere and just so much stuff to look at and buy or sell. It's just so much fun.
That's Greg Flamm. He's at DuPage Picker on Facebook and Twitter. We've got a full lineup of callers. I mean, the lines are lit up. We've also got some texts. Let's go right to it. Let's go to Dan. Dan, what do you want to brag about, Dan?
Hey, gentlemen. How are you tonight?
Hey,
good.
Dan.
How about you, man?
Good, good. Yeah, so my son's going to be going away to college, and I was getting ready to frame a couple tickets that I have. My father gave me from the very first game at Wrigley at night.
Ooh.
These tickets are unused because the game, I believe,
it was rained out.
Yeah.
Yep.
The famous Greg Maddux slide.
Yeah, 8-8-88, right? Was the date on that, right?
Yep.
You know what? I'm in the car.
Actually, the game was on 8-9 because they had to move it back the next night. But, yeah,
the original
T-shirts and everything.
What did those go for? Unused tickets to a rainout game that was supposed to be the first night game.
Yeah, I'm seeing one that was actually used. They asked $250 and they took best offer. I can't see what the actual amount, but I'm guessing they probably got $100, $150 for it. And that's a used stub. So if you have unused, you know, it should be a little higher.
Usually go for more if it's unused?
Yeah, if it's unused, yeah, it should be higher.
Hmm.
So yeah. But
did you not go to the? Could you not go to the next day? Was that the thing, or how'd you get the ticket?
My father had the tickets. He could not go for business, and he gave them to me, and they've been in my safe ever since.
Wow.
Good place for it.
Well, they're only going to go up in value, I would think, so.
All right.
The longer
you agree. You know, I will say, Dan, as a lifelong Chicago guy, I always bristle at the idea of the lights. You know, like there's a certain part of me that's like, okay, I get it. And over the years, they've sort of been like, well, it's only going to be one night a week. Oh, it's going to be two nights a week. It's only for prime time.
Right.
And now, like today, I kind of made the joke. It was a day game. Today.
Right.
Like, how quaint.
Right.
What an anomaly to have a day game at Wrigley.
It's
but it just
like
seems
that's
like,
the,
yeah.
Normal thing now.
I mean, it's just nonstop. And I was kind of annoyed a little bit, even though I understand how it works with the Cubs playoff run last year, you know, especially when you got close to the World Series. One of those days. Make it a day game. Wouldn't it be great if there's like a Sunday afternoon World Series game? Nah, they couldn't do it. Too much money.
Right, a lot of money at night.
All right, sorry, Dan.
We digress.
I digress. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks.
Thank you.
These damn kids with their lights and their stadiums.
That's right.
All right, 312-981-7200. Let's stay on the Cubs train. Let's go to Mike. Mike, what do you want to brag about, Mike?
Yes, when the Cubs retired number 31 for Greg Maddux and Fergie Jenkins, they commissioned an art print by John Hanley. Mm-hmm. I have it. It's numbered, and it's signed by both Fergie and Greg Maddux. Ooh, I met them both in person.
Wow.
All right. So a print. Is it, I mean, is when you say prints, is it a painting or is it a photo?
It's a painting.
Is it abstract or is it like just the two of them kind of thing?
It's sort of like, you know, there's like a vignette of Wrigley, and then one side is Fergie Jenkins, one side is Greg Maddux. They gave a copy of the actual painting to both of them that game when they retired the number.
Okay.
Okay.
It's rare enough that there aren't any showing up, so that's a good sign.
That's good.
Yeah, so if you want to shoot me a picture, I'll do some more research for you. But right now, I can't find any online. So, but I'm guessing in the hundreds for sure, probably 250 and up. Mm. And if they signed it, even more. So
there you go. All right, thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, let's keep going. Let's go to Jason. Jason, what do you want to brag about, Jason?
Hey, Justin, Greg.
Hey, buddy.
Hey.
I'm a first-time caller on your show, but a lifetime WGN listener.
Oh, all right. Great. Thanks for calling in, man.
We got to get the Cubs back on WGN.
All right. But there you go.
Anyhow, I got, and I don't know why I still have it, but it's my dad's old Motorola bag phone.
Right.
What's a bag phone?
They're going, first off, it was, 19... Late 80s technology.
Late 80s,
right.
Early 90s. I know that.
I had one, and I'll never forget because I racked up like a $500 phone bill with one of those.
It's essentially like the early
cell phones. You had to plug in your cigarette lighter to use it.
Oh, right.
Yeah, it had the built-in antenna that kind of just tilted up, and it was in a bag. You could carry it around. Yeah, I had one, racked up a huge bill, so I'll never forget it. But they go for nowadays, depending if they, you can test them to see if they work, plug them in a cigarette lighter.
Well, yeah, I plugged in about a year ago, and it turned on.
Yeah, and the big thing is, you want, if you're going to like buy and sell these, you want to make sure they didn't put the lock code in there. If it's unlocked, it tends to sell faster and will go for more money. But they're $10 to $100, depending if you have like the manual and all the accessories with it. Depending on the condition of the bag and everything like that. So, but yeah, bigger price. Okay, yeah,
it's in good condition. I don't have the manual or any of that stuff.
So when you plugged it in the cigarette lighter and you tried to turn it on, did it say ask for the code? You know, there's usually like a 4-digit code.
No, just the screen lit up and it was on.
Good, then you're unlocked and that helps. Yeah, so it should be the higher end. Then I would go 20 to 40 maybe is what I'm guessing.
$20 to $40?
Yeah.
That sounds so low. I would think that it does, would be like $1,000 for a bag phone.
You know, the irony...
the brick phones are the ones you want.
Mm-hmm. The irony of the whole thing is it started as a car phone. The whole cellular device thing started as a car phone, and now you get a $750 ticket if you play with it in the car.
Exactly right.
So true.
How about that, huh?
Yep.
Thanks, Jason. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
All right, thanks. Have a good night, guys.
You too.
Thank you both.
All right, so that's a great point, because that was the design for. I mean, he plugged in the cigarette
lighter. It only worked in the car, really.
That is the definition of irony. He got it.
Yep.
All right, let's go Steve. Steve, what do you want to brag about, Steve?
Well, I found this at a hospital rummage sale. It's a 1970 Life magazine. I know that they were high circulation, but it's a Ali Frazier is the cover story, their first fight. But the weird thing is the text is written by Norman Mailer and the photos are taken by Frank Sinatra Sr.
Oh, wow. Hmm. I did find a grouping of three that sold for $14, which sounds really low. I would have guessed much higher as well. But, yeah, it looks like three, like 1970s-era Life magazines went for about $14. So
that one might be a little bit
higher. You know, you could probably do some more research yourself on that or send it to
most me. Magazines, I just cut the beer and cigarette ads out and frame and map them and sell them.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I've talked about it before. Sometimes just the car ads inside Life or Esquire magazines, you can get $12 to $15 just for the one page.
Mm. Yeah. All right. I was just curious if it was an obscurity or not.
Great. Thanks for calling.
Appreciate it. All right. 312-981-7200. Let's go to the text line. Gosh, man, we got a lot of stuff tonight.
Cool.
All right, we did the camera, so how about Cuddly Dudley, 815, Cuddly Dudley from the Chicago Daily News. Good condition when you ordered a subscription from the early 70s. What do you think of that?
I'm going to guess 60 to 100, but I'm getting it pulled up here.
The other thing they have here while you work on that is a Chicago Bears practice mesh jersey. No name on the or numbers on them, just still in plastic bags. Certified.
Certified.
80s, practice 90s. Jersey. Practice mesh. Is that the orange mesh or blue mesh?
Right, that's what you want to know, and obviously no names on them. So,
isn't like the orange, the quarterback, isn't one of them like the quarterback, can't touch this one?
Right, don't touch.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to guess 25, 40, but they might be higher. You know, again,
and the Cuddly Dudley, you think 50,
that's still coming up. Depending on condition, you know, there's none online, so that's not helping. But
how could there no... What an awesome concept. Cuddly Dudley.
Yeah, I know exactly what it is.
Will you buy our newspaper? We'll throw in a Cuddly Dudley.
Wasn't that Ray Rayner's dog?
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
I just said yeah because I wanted to make like right. I knew what I was talking about.
Yeah, it was Ray Rayner's dog. Yeah.
All right. Let's go to Lori. Lori, what do you want to brag about, Lori?
Hi. I have three copies of the Super Bowl 20 with the Bears. Are they worth anything?
What mean, like copies of what?
Program or?
Yes, I'm sorry, the program.
Okay.
Like from the actual Super Bowl, like you walked into the stadium in New Orleans?
I would imagine so. It's a thick magazine type thing.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Not the cheapos where you get the $1.50s with the pencil. You're talking about the ones with the,
The actual things that you walked in and you got.
Right. And it's a white background, I'm guessing, with the double X in the center over the trophy?
Yes.
Yeah. Those are $10 to $35 is what they're going for.
How much were they at the Super Bowl? They probably were $10, $15.
Yeah. And you know what they do with any Super Bowls? They just print so many of those so they can sell them nationwide. It's not like they made it just so you got it at the stadium.
Right.
But yeah, so, you know, they made so many of those.
That's good stuff just to be able to go through and
it's better just keep that, you know, it just looks great.
I'm hoping to have Ditka sign it if I ever run into him, you know.
You got to go to his restaurants, yeah.
I know.
Yeah, and then you know what they'll say? You go up to him and you go, this is the secret at Ditka's. Every time I go in there just for fun, I go, oh, is the coach here? just kind of mess with him. And they say, oh, you know what? He was just here.
Just here, right.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I just saw him on the TV in Connecticut. Like, he's not here. But right. they that's their line. Oh, you know what? They look around. I think he just missed him.
Yep.
Yeah.
Check the valet.
And then you say, I'll wait.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Lori.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you. Just had this vision of, like, Lori going down to Dicka's and calling him out when they're like, you know, he was just here. I know that's fake. Justin told me that's fake.
I'm in the biz. I know the deal.
I know. Yeah. Let's go to Joe. Joe, what do you want to brag about, Joe?
Hey, I thought it'd be appropriate since it's going to be 92 degrees tomorrow.
Oh.
I was rooting around my attic recently.
As one does.
Yes, righto. And I came across this old sled, and aside from dust, it's in perfect condition. It's one of the old steel runner types with wooden slats, and they'll kind of steer right and left by pulling the front little slat, if you will.
Right.
And it's got Yankee clipper on it.
Oh, yeah.
With a clipper in the center, like a sailing ship clipper.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know what it's worth.
Yeah, that's a good one. But, I mean, those are pretty – I feel like – I don't know about the Yankee clipper, but that style of sled –
right.
I feel like my dad has 40 of them. Like every time I go up there, because he kind of live in the woods in the snow, and so every time we go up there, I'm like, can we get a better sled? Can you just go to the Walmart and get like one of the, like the saucer?
We only had a saucer.
So. Yeah, I'll take the saucer. Those are faster.
We had the aluminum saucer,
I used a cardboard box myself.
There you go. Some people use a hefty bag, so you got to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, $20 to $40 is what it looks like they're going for. It's kind of what I'm seeing here. So yeah.
Comprende. Appreciate it, guys.
No problem. Thanks for listening.
Phenomenal.
Awesome. Thanks,
buddy. 312-981-7200. Here's what we'll do. We'll take a quick break, and then we will we'll come back, and we will wrap up tonight's swap meet. We still got great text to get to. 312-981-7200. Stay with us. It's a swap meet. 720 WGN, sponsored by Wolf Flea Market. Welcome aboard, Wolf.
Yes.
312-981-7200. I'm Justin Coffin, Greg Flam in studio at DuPage Picker, both on Facebook and Twitter. You see, I said in such a distinguished Twitter. 815 says, I have a tournament soccer foosball table with ashtrays. Ooh.
Ashtrays, yeah.
Ooh.
Okay.
That's, you know, the design. They designed that with, they're like, that's going to be worth something. Just for the fact it has to be 70s, right? When they're like, or before, when they're like, and you know, a good foosball tournament, you got to smoke.
Right.
I mean, think about this, guys. No one's going to want to play foosball without smoking a cigarette.
Smoking, right.
And it says set up for home use. What does that mean?
It might be a coin op then, and they set it up it's free play or something.
All right. What do you got on that? Anything?
Coming up here.
Is foosball table something that makes it into your world?
Not so much my world because I deal with smaller items, but trying to get you a price here.
Foosball's the one with like the... It's soccer, essentially, right?
Yeah, and it's, the handles.
Spin it.
They look like they're, 100 to 500 for them. But, this one, because it's coin op, might be a little bit more.
Yeah, and you know what? Strong, though. Strong idea to have the old foosball in the home.
Yep, on the free play.
Yeah.
Yep.
Kind of want to go over to this guy's house. Sounds like it'd be a party.
Now, does
the
he have
ashtrays
the,
and the foosball.
Right. And does he have the cover so it can turn into a poker table?
Yeah, and right. Maybe set up the Atari.
Right.
A lot that can happen in this guy's basement.
Yep. Sounds like a fun guy.
773 says, my late husband was a recorder player, and he left at least a dozen of various sizes of recorders, including a couple brand new unopened. Is there value for this? How do you sell it? I don't know how you sell
that.
I don't know if that's going to be worth anything, only because I have a fourth grader who got sent home with a recorder.
Right.
And I'm not belittling the music. The music's great, but they seem to be quick to give away the instrument.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm sure that your husband had better quality instruments than what they were giving my fourth grader, but...
Mm. Yeah, obviously in grade school they use the plastic, cheapo ones.
Yeah.
But some can be, I'm looking here, $350, $200.
Tell me a Florida White Sox t-shirt's going to be about $15 and a recorder's
going to
be $300.
I know, no justice in the world.
630, I've seen this one before. How about a solid brass medallion from the Pick Congress Hotel?
Yeah.
Back way before the 60s.
Yeah, that obviously I'm not going to be able to find because it's a one-of-a-kind type item.
Solid brass medallion.
Yeah, but that's...
What does that mean?
It's kind of like a paperweight they made,
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just kind of with that logo. And a lot of companies do them. A lot of unions will make them,
that type of thing.
Yeah.
All right, keep going. 815 says they have a black velvet painting of the cover of King Crimson, Court of the Crimson King.
Now we're talking, yeah. And I'm, as you, look back on past episodes, I'm into the black velvet thing, the kitsch thing. So you got my attention. But King Crimson has a great cult following. So I'm guessing you can get two guys bidding war. That could be over $1,000.
Really?
Yeah. And, but if you, if you only get one guy interested, it could be a $30 or $40.
You're really going to have to go mine the King Crimson fan base.
Yeah.
Find out where they're hanging out.
Yeah. They'll look on eBay. I sell their CDs quite often and albums. So
really?
They have a good following, so they'll find it.
815 says, I have the 25th anniversary and the 50th anniversary issues of Playboy magazine still in the wrappers.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of that?
Yeah, I'm not finding both together, but the 25th, I think it was. Yeah. Sorry. Just lost it here. About 90 to 130 just for
just for the 25th?
Like one, yeah, either
so
one.
So double that, yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
All right.
30th one for $50 for the 30th anniversary. So, yeah, especially plastic wrap, that's great. You're going to get top dollar.
Yeah, so you get top dollar. Do they keep it in the wrapper, or is it some guy's like, he opens it up? Like,
I'm sure you can find many open ones if you actually want to look at it and read the articles, of course.
It defeats the purpose of a Playboy magazine to be keep it in the wrapper.
Yeah, if it's in the wrapper, you're going to keep it there. You can find open ones all day.
Speaking of weird softcore, 847 says, I have a vintage Hotsy Totsy erotic flip book.
Yeah, those
I think it's from the 50s, 60s. It was a comic/magazine mail-in item.
Right,
still in great condition.
Yeah, that's kind of your grandfather's softcore stuff going on there. they're like $10 and up is what I'm finding.
Yeah.
So.
All right.
So, yeah.
All right, so let's see what else we got here as we wrap up. 815's got old 70s Jim Beam Western Series, unopened whiskey bottles at 9, and an old skeleton keys. They go together?
No, they'd be separate, yeah. Skeleton keys are great because people are repurposing them for decorating. The Jim Beam decanters are, they're all over the place. Which one did he say that again?
It's a Western Series?
Western Series.
Unopened?
Yeah, that's I can't tell
Western
you offhand.
Western Series.
But yeah, the decanters, you know, if they're full, you really can't sell them because they have alcohol in them. And so you got to kind of do a friend type deal. But yeah, the decanters, people collect those.
Trains,
cars, all that, different shapes of those.
Of Jim Beam.
Mm-hmm.
312 says, I have a Wilson tennis racket and racket cover, both signed by Billie Jean King.
There you go.
Woo! I'm down with that.
Yep.
Billie Jean King, tremendous, tremendous athlete that does not look like an athlete. When I see Billie Jean King out there, I'm like, oh, my fourth grade teacher. And then she schools whoever she's playing in tennis. I'm like, wow, that's pretty intense.
Yep. Those were the days with, who was it, Bobby? Battle of the Sexes. Who was the other guy? Bobby Riggs, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so let's see. I'm not finding anything signed offhand by her, but I'm sure it's at least $100, $200 and up.
All right, well, there you go. This has been, there's a couple more texts here, but we ran out of time. Get them in next week. 312-981-7200. Greg Flamm, at DuPage Picker, both on Facebook and Twitter. He joins us every Wednesday night to evaluate your collectibles, your memorabilia, your junk. Greg Flamm, great to see you, buddy.
Great to see you. Thanks.
All right. That's going to do it for the show tonight. Coming up tomorrow night, Lawrence Peters is back in studio with the Lawrence Peters outfit. You know what that means? Old country, more country music. Then what a week. We had an Israeli guitarist.
Right.
We had a guitarist from Def Leppard, the shirtless one.
Yep.
We had Donica Lynn tonight. It was awesome. The performance of Fever.
That was.